Okay, and then I'd entertain a motion to approve the minutes that were sent out, the link was sent out.
So moved.
Moved by Ms. Grumman. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Commissioner McElhaney. Just so everybody knows, would you mind scrolling down there? And just there were a couple changes that we wanted to make sure. We had a little discussion on the Minnesota floor space standards versus ACA, and so we just wanted that was the one change. So, okay, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Okay, minutes are approved. Okay, with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Schwartzman. But to lead up to that, going out of the last meeting, we talked about the need for a few of us to get together. So, getting together with the sheriff and the chief corrections officer and the architect. So we did that by conference call. There were a few of us commissioners in the room. So we talked about that at the end. The need to do that. And so last week we had two conference calls, so it was just walking through the details of the space. And so you might have seen the articles in the public opinion about that. So what happened to this? Oh, there you go. Okay. Here you go. Thank you, sir. And so this is basically the result of that conversation. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Schwartzman.
Thank you. Thank you, Lee. Thank you all. It's good to see you all again. So to add to a little bit what Lee said, there had never been a program done for either the jail facility or a program done for the sheriff's office. So what we did, and you, to be quite honest with it, it's hard to do a planning session in a large committee. A lot of times you have to do with the specific users in that area. So we went through and we identified the standard areas that we would see in programs in spaces for jails. We identified the standard areas we would see in the sheriff's office. And we went back on those two conference calls back and forth to identify and to verify the appropriate staffing, the appropriate spaces, and kind of nail that down. So we'll talk a little bit more about that as we get into it. Part of our goal tonight is we've got some information. The agenda as a whole is to, and I think you all saw it, that Lee sent out, we've taken initiated kind of anticipated bed analysis that's been looked at over many summaries, utilized that to come up with a classification system that Al will talk about, or at least a breakdown, to provide the most flexibility for the jail and the best utilization of the beds that you would have, and we'll talk about that some. I'm briefly going to go through the space program. Again, we'll identify what's in there. There's a lot of minute detail, but I want to at least make sure you all see it and understand a little bit. And then we're going to get into the sites, because in essence we have 15 sites. If you include the existing courthouse site, there's 15 sites, and our goal tonight would be to go through and say which ones make sense, which ones don't, and nail that down. Because the next iteration is where we take that space program that we've developed, and we start to put footprints on these sites and start to understand how they lay out on these sites and how they'll flow on these sites and what the opportunities are on the various sites. So with that, I guess we'll get into it. So now I can shut up for 5 minutes and let Al go through it.
As a part of our conference call that we had, talking about the jail, going to the first page, or page two actually, what we did with the sheriff and the jail administrator was to define further how they are able to provide separation for sentenced and non-sentenced inmates. The previous meeting we had, we talked about a work release unit. We talked about larger direct supervision type units. After looking at and talking to the sheriff, looking at statistics and talking to the sheriff, it didn't make sense to have a 26-bed unit that may only have 8 people in and we can't put anybody else into there. So what we did was we defined units like we did before, 2/2, 3/3, 4/4. Those larger work release units that we had became 4/4s and 3/3s. The numbers haven't changed. They've become more compartmentalized. The reason for that is it allows greater functional flexibility to move people from one area to another. One of the things we need to remember when we talk beds and cells, there's a big difference there. If we have a 2/2 unit, which is 2 cells/2 cells, which means there's 8 beds in that unit. If you only have, for example, 3 women in there, you have given up 5 other beds. So as we're going through, we did not violate the 120 that we talked about. That's there. What we did, though, is allow more capability to move people around versus having a large unit. And say there were 10 work release people where we designated 26 beds before, those 16 beds would have been neutralized by those 10 people. We now have that ability to move them, and we could have work release in two areas and utilize space better. So, Sheriff, if I'm saying anything incorrect, let me know. But the biggest thing was to clarify that so that when we go to my component, which is the staffing, we're able to define the staffing accordingly. So as you look through the reporter, if you see up here, basically the 120-bed unit is still there. We did talk about some future expansion of 4x4 unit shelled in, nothing in there, just having an open space. It might be storage for now. It might be something down the road. You may not need it.
Or the potential, depending on how things lay out, maybe it's a pod that could be added in the future too.
Yeah, maybe it's something that could be added. That would be a future thing initially, but the number we talked about is there. The other thing we really had a great discussion on was in the booking area, the ability to hold people that are arrested immediately. But the other component that needed more work was the juvenile side. And that is such a roller coaster because at the time we were talking, they had 10 juveniles in there that they were holding. 5 days later, they were down to two. We have to be able to utilize those cells on the booking side also when they aren't being needed for juveniles, for males and females. So that's why you see on there it kind of talks about a hybrid booking system. Instead of building double, we're utilizing the same, and we have the capabilities of doing that. Again, staying within our numbers that we talked about last time, and that's really crucial because we do not want to push the numbers any higher. We want to stay with where we're at. So everything that you see, when you see a 2x2 or 3x3, 4x4, they're all double bunked cells in a unit. The bigger thing, though, is now we can do pretrial versus sentenced. We can do special management versus a general population person. We can do gender. We can do ethnicity. We can do threat assessment if we have that, if there's somebody there. Or predator-prey issues. All of those can be sight and sound separated, meeting the ACA guidelines and not having to move them with the type of pods that we or the units that we have developed. Any questions? I think that was the biggest thing that I wanted to make sure we cleared up was that. You know, and the other thing is, when somebody says, you have X amount of beds, yes. But in a 120-bed unit, we have 60 cells. So as we go down the track, I would encourage you to ask the sheriff or the jail administrator, how many times do you get an adjudicated juvenile in here, 19 years of age, and is a threat to others that you have to keep separate from others? What does that do to your population?
Or you bring somebody in that's TB has become an increased issue. You can't put that individual in a unit with a bunch of other people. So this gives that ability to separate.
Sex offender for protective custody, same thing. You have many, many different scenarios where you have to keep those people safe from others.
We also noted at the very bottom about talking about these sub-day rooms. So sub-day rooms, just so you know, is a little room basically right outside of a grouping of cells. And you can have a sub-day room within a larger area, and again, it gives you more control of those individuals. So again, if they're not playing well with each other, there's issues, you can still keep them locked up and secure in a larger unit. So again, it helps to give you more kind of control of those spaces. And we talked about that as well.
I just have one question. The 120 number that we come up with last time, my fear is, I guess I don't honestly believe that's enough. My fear is it's not going to go the distance. How long are we projecting into the future before it's full with 120?
That's a tough one. I think your ADP lately, Sheriff, has been around 80. Is the 80 mark? You know, again, with that
last 2 months.
Yeah,
so 3 months.
So the interesting thing, if you look at 80 plus your operational capacity factor, which I think we talked about before, that you don't have the same types of individual. You need that space to move people around, which anywhere from a 10% factor. So it's another eight beds. And then there's a peaking factor. You could have a weekend where you have all kinds of issues and you have additional. So, again, a lot of DOCs I've dealt with have looked at a 20% factor to account for that. So if you add 16 beds to that, not to talk around it a little bit, I'm just trying to think through it to tell you the truth. You know, you're at 96 beds, kind of where you're at now. Your increase has been steady that the county's seen. Not what I would say a dramatic spike back when we saw methamphetamine issues and things like that in 2005, 2006, whatever it was, 2004. My sense is, and I'd have to look back at some of the data, that the 120 is going to last a while, but we need to master plan, and the while is not a 5-year, not a 10-year, but we need to master plan to add on to those pods.
Two things that come into play with that. We did talk about alternatives, which we need to add in here at some point, electronic monitoring, standing orders from the judge to release somebody if they come in on a Friday night and give them a court date. For example, they get a DUI at 0.10. If it's so moved that they can be released to a responsible party the next day when they're below 0.08 and be assigned a court date, that takes some pressure. That changes operation. I mean, that happens in many places, but that's something that the sheriff and the judge and everybody, they have to sit down and talk about. The other thing we talked about when you interviewed us is for future expansion, depending upon where we go, having the ability to do what's called bookend building. Take that unit and fold it over. If that's a realistic thing, you would never need another 100 cells, but you have the ability to add to that. So, but the infrastructure would be for the initial of what we're working for right now.
Well, that's actually Douglas County. I'm sorry.
Yep.
Douglas County, when you all toured that, when we did
in Alexandria, Minnesota.
Alexandria, was actually the ability to extend the whole entire pod, which I want to say might have been another 40 beds or 40 or so.
Was that, I don't remember, was that shell space or was that just ground space that you
ground
would
build? They could continue to build north, and there was another area up there.
Okay. Well, and using that theory, my other question would be, is that booking area large enough? Because that's one of the primary instances that you wouldn't make a new booking area if you're going to, add on whatever it is, say another 80, 90 cells.
So when I calculated the programming, I used 140 as a max number. Now, the booking area is a good size. We've got some good movement. It's based on one booking post. Could there be a second one? Yeah, that would expand a little bit. I mean, if you had a very active booking area, you'd have two posts in there. So that could expand a little bit. The number of cells, having 10 cells in there, depending upon the juvenile activity, is a good amount. I was just going back to Bill's Genius's initial analysis, and he had a projection of 114 beds out to 2035. Again, the 120 gives us a little bit of flex space as well, and that's including. So what we've been talking about with this classification factor, he also has that peak factor classification factor. So I think unless things were to dramatically go awry, and which you never can predict, and you all saw that in all the analysis that have been done, it's a little bit of a crystal ball. You take into consideration that what's happening in the community, what the changes and trends have been, but it's a little bit of a crystal ball. The best thing to do is design it so it can expand.
If I could add a comment to that, I think there is obviously risk. When you see 120, after when we talked about a different number before, and especially with the spikes we've had recently, you get a little nervous. So that means we have to think about risk mitigation. So shell space is part of that. The ability to expand is part of that. Alternatives, whether we're talking about the mental health issues that we got going on or other pretrial things that we might work on in the future. But, there has to be, it's kind of part of a plan. So, yeah, there's risk, but we just got to understand what we're assuming. So,
when you look at large jurisdictions that have a lot of cells, they always talk about how you can't build yourself out of the correctional need, and so they go to the alternative to incarceration. And I think you just started drug court, if I'm not correct, or if I'm correct, right?
But a little over a year ago, okay. a year and a half ago. Veterans Court started about a year ago, a year and a half ago. There's a DUI court. It's not come to this county yet, but they're in other counties in the state. There's also a movement to make Class 5 and Class 6 felonies, Class 1 misdemeanors. I don't know where that's going to go. I anticipate it'll be introduced in the next legislative session.
So that'll decrease possible sentencing?
Well, for ingestion of a controlled substance, for possession of a controlled substance for personal use that's residue on a piece of paraphernalia, for example. Those are Class 1 misdemeanors in 38 states. South Dakota is one of about a dozen to 12 to 14 where it's still a Class 5 and a Class 6 felony. There's a push now out in Pierre to continue with Senate Bill 70, presumptive probation, on these Class 5 and 6 felonies to make these types of Class 5 and 6 felonies Class 1 misdemeanors. So I don't know what effect that's going to have. I don't know if it'll pass the first time around, but my guess is it will be, and this is just my opinion, at some point between now and 2035, where some of these studies are projected out, that's probably what's going to happen.
I think one question I have,
sure,
Judge, on that. Would that cause more impact on the jail if things, more things are misdemeanors as opposed to felonies, or is that just going to kind of fold in with SB 70 where would they be less likely to be incarcerated at all when that happens? Or
there will probably be some jail time. My guess would be 7 to 10 days for a first offense, rather than the standard is anywhere from 60 to 90 days on a first offense.
Okay. So it's less jail time for those offenses.
Toby, what's your guess on this?
Well, same answer. I see more jail time, but it's going to depend on how they reoffend. Suspended jail time gets reinstated, which leads to more jail time, those kinds of things. One comment that I'll make, just for everybody's information here, and we discussed this at my report, when I gave my report to the commission this last Tuesday. Sorry, I'll speak up a little bit. When we talk about alternatives to incarceration, the largest alternative to incarceration program that we have had in place since 2007, and it's the 24/7 program. A lot of people forget about that program. We have been consistently over the last, I'd say all the months of 2016 here, running consistently 100 people in that program right now. Last month it was 117. Now they're either checking in twice daily PBT. There were 40 people on scram bracelets. They're checking in, doing two or three times weekly UAs for drug testing. They're wearing sweat patches. And Commissioner Johnson brought that, very to my attention, that as to how high that number was just this last month. And when you talk about alternatives to sentencing, I think Cottington County's doing an awful good job supervising 117 people while only incarcerating 80 for the month, where we have 96 beds in a jail. So to do the math, if 10 or 15% of those persons that are on the 24/7 program violated and had to be jailed, we wouldn't be able to support that right now.
And then using that information, that was the basis of what I was questioning the number-wise. Because as a commissioner, we got 80 in jail, but we got 117 on a program that at any point they could, full moon, go crazy, and they all go.
We want to be in jail.
We have nothing to handle that.
Not all those people that are on alternative sentencing or presumptive community probation, if they violate, there's not all those people are going to end up in jail. A good percentage of them are going down to prison, depending on the violation.
But short term, they would be incarcerated locally.
Okay. So in big picture, kind of summarizing, you do have alternatives. You're using them well. And I would like to tell the group, too, alternatives are never really substantially reducing the entire facility that you need. You need a certain amount of facility to accommodate your jail population. It's a good alternative for exactly that, to help to minimize day beds. So we're going to stay with the 120. Well, I say we're going to stay with the 120. That's a good question. I mean, again, we were looking at Bill Gagnos' part report. We looked at some of that information. It seemed appropriate. At the time when this was done a few years ago, a little over a year ago, were you seeing the same spikes around 80 when this was done?
No, he did. Bill did not. That's one of the things. That's a factor that Bill did not have the advantage of seeing. That's why
he was right in the middle of his analysis.
Because you were right in the
of
60s
our,
or so.
Of our ADP when April, May, just about last year at this time is when we started seeing the population. So the population spike that you gentlemen talked about in Minnesota in 2005, I'm afraid that we in South Dakota here might be hitting something similar to that right now.
Okay.
We are usually about 10, you can say we're about 10 years behind anything else that's going on in the country. And,
Well, if I can make a suggestion. Well, one other comment about the risk mitigation is the flexibility of a facility like this will help. That helps you use more of the cells, more of the beds that you have. So that's another aspect. But the other thing is we don't have to make a decision tonight, but obviously we need to keep on watching what goes on in the jail, and then over the I'd say probably the next few months maybe we'll
and I think what we'll do too is as we're developing the plans more, we're going to look at where does another pod go, how does this lay onto it, and as we start to put together these preliminary cost projections for these facilities, we'll know how much is this additional going to run. And you know, again, if it's designed properly, you hit that sudden peak, you're able to build on and add on. Now, of course, construction costs a year, two, 3 years down the road are typically higher than they are today, but at least you've got that capability without overbuilding initially. So,
and it might end up being like, you know, if our discomfort factor goes up, we might want to think about more very solid shell space. You know, maybe that's, you know, that might be the way to balance it, but as an alternative. So.
So with that being said, you know, the crux of our discussion that we had talked about having these individual units versus one large unit, one large work release unit. As we go down the road for staffing, it's going to affect the staffing a whole lot better because one person, for example, can watch up to 36 people. So if you've got 36 people in three units, one staff is watching them versus a direct supervision of 1 to 26, that person would be sitting in with them and not be able to be out. So it's a podular remote type situation. So.
Sure. On the next page 3, you're already there. This is just a confirmation. So as we start to do some of the space programming and planning, really like we talked about last time, we're going to be using what the National Center of State Sport put together. This was very appropriate square footage based on a lot of the programming we do. I'll tell you the truth, I would never second-guess National Center because they're really good at what they do with sports planning. So I think that's appropriate. We're going to add that. That's an overview of that. On the next page 4, this starts to give you a summary of where we currently are. And so there's a net square footage of courts, which is interior, not including some walls and shafts and things like that. And then there's gross square footage of the exterior. So the net square footage is the NSF. Of course, the gross square footage is GSF. And we're showing you the net and gross square footage for the three different types of justice facility components. The jail, the courts, which also take into consideration state attorney and some other departments as well, and then the sheriff's office. And so those are those programs, those spaces. The next sheet then go into a little bit on how we, you know, the courts is basically a copy from the National Center of State. The jail and the sheriff's office are the ones that we developed over the conference calls the last couple weeks or so with the sheriff and Tom and with Lee and others that were involved. So the first is just an overall jail summary. The various types of areas, of course, visitation in the jail facility, maintenance and storage, food service. Again, the food service area was designed for about 140 beds. So that 1,799 square foot space is really based on more of about 140 beds. Now, I will tell you, in a food service facility, they can actually run longer shifts, more people, so they can utilize the same space and get more meals out of it. So it's not like we suddenly need to expand that. They can utilize that space. Laundry. Laundry is based on, again, the number of facilities we've done over the years. You know, depending upon the size of facility, again, you can run, you know, a lot of times it's a trustee or somebody that's dealing with that. As long as you have two commercial washers, two commercial dryers, with the ability to have another dryer in there, you can make it work. So that's kind of what this space is developed on. Central control, dispatch is really a two-post kind of position to handle what you need to do. And if anybody's got any questions, kind of what these spaces are, because I can talk about it. Intake and release is really kind of your booking area and all the spaces that are associated with intake and release. Healthcare is just a medical unit. Sheriff, I'm not sure. Do you currently contract out for healthcare, don't you? Okay.
Yes,
do you have an individual to come in, help see the inmates, do what they need to do, so you have space to take care of those medical needs. Inmate programming, of course, is the classroom that can be used for church services and libraries, and it's a rec space so that they can actually get out. You know, one of the best ways to control inmate behavior, of course, is not to keep them locked up all the time, but actually allow them to get out and move around. And it's a privilege that can be taken away easily as well. So, inmate program space. Work release, again, is kind of part of the general overall area that's just some support. What is in a work release, typically contraband in work release is critical. You have people going out in the streets, they're getting jobs, they're working, and they're bringing stuff back, and sometimes they're selling it to other inmates within the facility that have a drug issue. Being able to bring those individuals through, search them, and make sure that they're not bringing contraband to the facility is critical. So that work release support area is really dedicated to that, making sure that the contraband is not being brought into the facility.
We saw that at Alexandria, I believe. Yeah, there was a good room for that.
Yep, yeah. Typically, I have a lobby that's not off the front door. It's off the back area. Right. The inmates come into the lobby. Females go to one side. The males go to the other. The officer comes back, escorts them in, takes them through the locker, strips them out, cleans them. They change into their inmate clothing, and then they go into their housing unit. So you can control it very well through that. And then this lists all the housing units. And just like Al said, we've got 11 housing units. It's a little higher than we typically have done for these kinds of numbers. I mean, 8 housing units to 9. But those are larger pods. Those are more cells in one unit. What we're talked about here does give a lot of flexibility. So I could understand that. So that's where the 36,000 comes in. I went back and did a little analysis, and I think I talked about the interview too, which is kind of interesting. So we just finished, it's about to start construction, a remodeling expansion up in Thief River Falls, Minnesota, on a 92-bed facility that we're doing up there. When you take the jail area and divide it by the number of inmates, that facility came up to 250 square feet per inmate. I looked at another facility we did, Houston County in southern Minnesota. A little bit more inmate space, and I'm not sure what some of the factors were. We did have some large kind of storage spaces in the building. That came up to 325 square feet per inmate. Blue Earth County, Minnesota, which is another, I don't know if you were involved in that, but when I was with a different firm some years ago, we worked on that. That came up to 252 square feet per inmate. And I think if we were to divide this by, say, the 136, I had this written down before, but apparently I didn't put it on this
sheet. So this is taking all the space in the jail support space?
All the jail space, everything. So if you took the 36,158 divided by the 136, it's 265 square feet. 265 square feet per inmate. So, again, that's kind of right in line. It's kind of a... I like to do that because, to me, it's a back check. Is it within reason? Does it make sense? And it's right there.
And that's, again, walls, hallways, program spaces, demising walls, everything in the component. So it's not just the space where they're at. I mean, it includes this wall, that wall, the windows, you name it.
Was that, were you figuring Minnesota square footage? Or the ACA square footage?
In your program?
Yeah.
In your program, it's, figuring the ACA square footage is that we're there.
So we increased every one of the cell areas to make sure for the unencumbered area. Al and I kind of went back and forth just to make sure that was... So we, right now the program area is for larger cells.
Okay, so these would be the unencumbered with 70 square feet per cell.
Exactly.
The Minnesota one is...
Go ahead.
The Minnesota would be 70 square feet, that's unencumbered. The encumbered, which is ACA, where you have to take out that 3x5 bed, which is adding an extra 15 square feet, that's what we figured in right now with the ACA standard. That's
so Minnesota
there.
Allows you to use 70 square feet?
Yes.
Right.
So we use 85.
If at some point the commissioner said we are okay and this is how we are going to set forth, right. we can back off that program a little bit. Right now we have to go... with the direction of working with the ACA standard.
That's kind of where we're headed, but I think at some, if it gets I mean, we talked about it. Yeah, we got to a point where we were, it was a very, you know, very rough guess, $300,000 difference in cost for something like this. So.
How much did you put it? Oh, did I put it?
Yeah.
I put it. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, what was the number?
300,000?
I just checked. That's exactly what I was set today, too.
So I guess if we're, you know, if that's, but I think the key, and we talked about this last time, too, is that it's got to be, the whole package has got to be a humane and safe package.
You know? And from that point, Lee, too, if the county is looking at ACA, and ACA, you know, when I did a project out west years ago, the city and the county we were working for at the time went with ACA because ACA is a, if you go with ACA standards and an inmate does try to sue the county for some reason, we had an inmate slip in a shower and try to say that it was not proper. The ACA actually provides guidelines and support to help to protect the county from potential frivolous inmate litigation. So if you're going to stay with ACA standards, you might as well stay with ACA standards. That would be our suggestion. So I don't see it as a pick or choose. I think you potentially go with
it. I think it might be good. So Minnesota standards are, as you described, other, and we talked a little bit last time about other states, and I'm trying to remember.
North Dakota, Nebraska.
They do not follow ACA.
Iowa does not follow ACA. But again, where they change, they make sure that they have their programming spaces available to them because the one thing ACA and the feds will look at when they come in and say, okay, I understand you're going to a smaller sleeping space, but then what are you doing as an alternative? We have programming. We have them out of the cell. They're not sitting in their cells 23 hours a day. They're out of the cells during the day. We've got programming available. We've got some large muscle space where what used to be called recreation, but, you know, an area where they can walk or jump up and down or, you know, something like that. So it's humane treatment of someone while incarcerated that they're going to look at if you put that as the basis for what you're there. The sleeping area, if it's for 8 hours a day, is one thing. If they're out of their cells and have the ability to be out during the day, that's another thing. You're giving them options.
So most surrounding states don't.
Correct.
And our issue is that we don't have a Department of Corrections at the state level that regulates this thing, this particular thing. So.
Okay. So on page six, again, this is just, I'm not going to go through a lot of detail on this. This just helps to understand that, you know, when you look at the visitation, of course, this is individuals coming. In today's world, you don't have that, you know, everybody's probably seen that non-contact where the inmates come in one side, the visitors come in one side, you look across the glass, you pick up a handset, you talk back and forth. In today's world, it's really about efficiency of inmate movement and control for security and things like this. So normally the visitation monitor is actually in the housing unit. In their day room pod, and I think you probably did see this in Alexandria and others, there's a monitor, a unit that sits on the wall. The inmate can sit across, and the department turns it on, and they can communicate back and forth with their relative, with their friend, whoever is in the visitation area in a room separate off. So this is really just describing that visitation area, a number of seven. And then there's one non-contact, which is typically like an attorney visitation. Maintenance area, that's just a number of, you know, typical kinds of things, storage, general storage, maintenance, those kinds of things we would see in a new facility for those types of, you know, miscellaneous. In the page seven, food services, again, goes into a lot of detail. That's the overall kind of the way we program the spaces. We identify kind of the spaces within there, and then we identify the approximate areas for each one of those to come up with a gross square footage. I should also say, if you see on there, at the very, towards the bottom, there's a 0.30. So that says department circulation wall factor. So when you go through and do a program, those square footages, the 200 square foot, the 120 square foot, you know, those numbers, those are basically a box. You need the additional space that connects those boxes, the hallways and the thicknesses of walls that connects all that. That 30% is a planning factor that's a typical average of the hallways, the walls within that. So what you're doing is you're identifying each room or each operation. You're identifying the space required, and then that circulation factor, that point, that 30%, allows for those other kind of spaces that connect it all together within that department.
Yeah, I was just going to say, as a part of this, one of the things we might want to do is let you digest it, go through it, and look at it, because this is, again, the basis for what's needed to go to the next step to start identifying sites. So, I mean, we could stop, but we could go through every page, but I don't think we need to, unless somebody really wants to. But this is, no matter what site we look at, all of these growths, all of these square footage factors, this is how we got to it, this is where it's at, and this is what we're using to look at the sites. Yes, sir?
That's meaning if we had everything on the ground floor. One floor.
So the programming of the facility is when we say 4/4 or 3/3 for those housing units, we're assuming a stacked scenario. But it's not, when you take a jail facility, the only thing you're really stacking is a mezzanine of those housing units. There's not a lot of other function because it has staffing oversight impact. So when one a jail level. Facility, oh shoot, let me think. It's maybe 10 to 15% of the overall program, somewhere in that ballpark, is actually the mezzanine. So the majority of it is on the ground.
So we need a spot with 1,800 square feet for the building.
For the jail, if we're looking at the jail facility.
Oh, this is food service.
It's just the food service. Yep.
These are the pieces broken down.
These are the little pieces that go inside the big box. Put it that way.
The jail is almost a 30,000 ground footprint, 32,000 ground footprint.
So your big box is 30,000. Here's 1,800 square feet. Here's your
30,000.
Exactly. Correct. So again, page 8 identifies laundry and central control, like Al talked about. Page 9 is the intake, and again, it talks into booking and some of this other stuff. But again, and going back to your one comment on this, I tell you, the only thing I would be a little hesitant about, Sheriff, is on the booking desk processing station. Right now, we identify one. I think that maybe should be a 2. This is on page 9. Are you on page 9?
Yeah.
So page 9, right? Oh, yeah, you can see this. Anyway, right here says booking desk 1. I think potentially you could have 2 officers at that booking processing area, and I think that probably should be a little bit larger. It doesn't need to be tremendous.
I agree.
But I think that's
previous plans, we had 2 built in.
Yeah.
We knew over 3,000 bookings a year.
Yeah.
It'd be easy.
Because that's also your releases there. That's also your...
Yeah. Yes, correct. Everything in and out. Page 10 shows health care. Again, what we have planned for medical and how we typically do that. We're planning for examinations, things like that.
Quick question.
Yes,
so if
sir.
We change that to 2, does that... The net, it doubles.
It would go to 160. Yeah.
Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
No. This is what, we always see these in working sessions more than us just talking. Inmate programs again. No, what's not shown here on inmate programs is there would be an outdoor rec area as well. We wouldn't include it in square footage of programming because it's really just a fenced outdoor area. But you would have an outdoor rec area as well. The question with the outdoor rec that we discussed also is if you have juveniles, are you having a small rec area? So, you know, with the outdoor rec area, as we start doing some of these site planning exercises, I think we talked about the potential of an outdoor rec for juveniles as well, depending on how many you hold and how often you hold. Did that seem to be something that's important or not really?
I would prefer it to just be an indoor.
Yeah. You're not... How long as you all have held juveniles?
What's that?
What's the longest you've held juveniles?
They can be held, the judge can correct me if I'm wrong, up to 90 days.
Oh, so you're...
Maximum
okay.
90 days. And then
no longer them, but... up to 90 days.
The reason we haven't programmed that in there also is we did talk about the alternative outdoor recreation where you have the ability to open up what would be a jalousy window or a garage-type structure on the wall, allowing the fresh air in, allowing light in. It avoids the external contact of people throwing contraband in. Also, you know, the embarrassment of somebody being in an outdoor rec. I mean, there are people that don't want to go outside because they don't want to be seen. This way they can be getting the fresh air. I know that in many states they do that just because in the spring, the fall, it's too cold to go outside, but you open the windows, you can get the fresh air, they can see the daylight, they have all the amenities of being outside, but yet they're in a structured setting. And they're not in a fishbowl, basically.
Or the federal INS type inmates, too. Yeah. I mean, not to get off track, but on page 11, again, work release talks about the lockers, the men's and women's lockers. Those numbers, Sheriff, right now we just threw 32 for male and 12 for female. It's a good general starting point. We need to kind of work through that in your final plan. It's just a starting point for those. It's probably are higher than what you might need, but it's a good starting point. And then the numbers after that, from page, bottom of page 11, page 12, page 13, actually are all just duplication of this cell. So you'll see, you know, Al's question, we identify one ADA cell. You really don't need an ADA cell in every one. The way that we look at ADA requirements is, so long as you have like-type facilities, so not every pod has to have an ADA cell, some don't have to. But this shows the number of cells, the beds, and then other circulation factors that are typical requirements, day room circulation, so on and so forth. So as you get down to page 14, I'm just going to hit on the summary of the sheriff's office. So page 14 is when we program the sheriff's office and the types of space that are typical for sheriff's office. Public entrance, visitors areas is not, you know, it's typical. The records, civil warrants area, sheriff's admin, patrol investigations, kind of all those folks, your evidence, staff support, which again is some locker rooms, restrooms, some space like that, break room. Garage, which supports your law enforcement vehicles, which I think currently you've got some out of Public Works, I believe kind of north of the courthouse. And then we didn't have outside agencies. In conversation with Sheriff and Tom, you know, right now there is a certain amount of space that the Highway Patrol has in the building. We program the Highway Patrol space. You provide a backup 911 facility, so we program. So those outside agencies take care of the State Patrol, Highway State Patrol, and the 911 dispatch. So that 24,000, again, when we looked at that compared to other sheriffs, other law enforcement centers, that appear appropriate based on the size of staff you have. And then as you go through these other areas, page 15, page 16, 17, 18, you are really scooting along for that, 19, and 20, those just reiterate what's in that detail. And Al's probably right. I mean, I want to make sure that everybody understands it. This has all been very important to you. You've spent a great deal of time. And if you've got any comments on it, please don't hesitate to ask me. But I think in what we've put together, it's appropriate. None of it is excessive space. It's what we've done in a lot of other facilities. And it seems appropriate for what we've got planned. Page 21 then goes into... So now when you think about it...
Question here.
Yes, sir.
Back on 13, you mentioned something about the cells and the ADA. Yep. You talking about having one cell ADA accessible or whatever?
So Al, typically what we do is based on the types of units. So if you have a female unit, if you have a male unit, if you have a segregation unit, if you have a general population, if you have those types of units, you typically want to have at least one ADA cell to accommodate
for
them.
Each.
For each one.
Yes,
because we have made yours more flexible, I think you've got 11 units. To provide an ADA cell in every unit, I don't think makes sense. I don't think you need it. You're not, you know, when you think about ADA cells for wheelchair accessibility and things like that, you probably have very few inmates that have wheelchair issues, I'm guessing. We don't see it that often. You're looking like you have had it more often.
In the last few years, we have seen it, but I agree with what you're saying. You know, maybe half of the cells, you know, to still build a little bit of flexibility, but probably not more than half wouldn't actually need to be ADA accessible.
And we do, you know, it's not just wheelchair. I shouldn't say that, too. We do always put electrical in there for CPAP equipment, you know, these types of things as well. So anyway, I'm going to hit on getting into site plan. So now we've gone through enough information to understand for Cottington County what are the appropriate sizes of facilities. What's the appropriate court size? What's the appropriate jail size? What's the appropriate sheriff's office? Based on a lot of analysis that have been done over the years. Now that we've kind of gone through that, now we actually take a footprint and see how this starts to fit on the various sites.
So just to kind of clarify for everybody, so this is a this takes like the upper level, so of floor space requirements, that like that was about page 3. I'm just kind of making sure we clarify. Yeah, the one that has all the. Yeah, well, 4 starts with the jail, right?
No,
okay, that's 4. Yeah, 4 is everything. So, and then breaks. Then it takes the jail and the sheriff's part and breaks it down. So that's how this is organized. And so, I'm just trying to make sure we're all on the same sheet of music here. So, okay, all right. That was it.
So then you go to page. Page 21. So page 21 again. We looked at this last time. We just want to make sure we're always coming back to what you've all done before, what you've all agreed to before. At least how does that hit as we proceed in some of these next steps? So this was your site evaluation criteria sheet, and you had 10 items that you identified. The first 4 on there, or the first 3, excuse me, were the must-do, the priority. So a minimum size required, type. And space features. So to really cover this 20-year projection like you talked about, space, you know, for courts and jail to have that 20-year projection capability. Expandability, so for the ability for the facility to grow like we talked about. Those two we saw as very big, like we talked about, the ability to expand. Historic preservation, so that when we're looking at these 14 or different sites, that really doesn't apply to any of them except the existing courthouse. So we'll talk about that as we get into it a little bit, but of course, the existing courthouse is very important. The next 3 items that you had on there, operational cost, efficiency of design, and future expandability, which kind of rolls back to the other one. Again, the next level of priority, very important, and we are going to look at operational cost as we talk through some of the various planning aspects. Efficiency of design also plays into that operational sight lines, access, by your correctional officers to be able to move through the facility, the judge and the judge's staff to be able to securely flow from courtroom to chambers and things like this. And then items, the next 2 items on there, which were kind of numbered 6 and 3 over there, project cost and the midterm adaptability. So as you consider continue on, you know, to accommodate, you know, future growth, future changes, how that might, again, which, again, kind of goes into that expandability, flexibility. And then the last 2, which I thought were kind of interesting. So the aesthetic, of course. I mean, we talked about this. Your courthouse is gorgeous. If you attach something to your courthouse, it wants to not necessarily have that same level of grandeur, but it still has to respect the quality of the courthouse that's there. If you're building at a remote site, it needs to be durable, out of good materials that are going to last a long period of time, but aesthetics is clearly less of an issue. Location, how well does the option address the desire to maintain the current courthouse related and things like that? So that was kind of low on the requirement, location. So,
but it's there. That's the key thing.
It is there. And to tell you the truth, Lee, that's why we thought it was interesting, because as we talk through these various sites, location has an operational impact. Mm-hmm. Depending upon what's moved and how it's moved, yeah. Judge, I have a few questions. I want to hopefully put you on the spot for tonight. Hopefully you don't mind.
There's a reason why you said
it. Yeah. I'm gonna change.
So those were what we started with. So as we go forward, we'll talk about some of these others. So right now there's what we would consider 15 sites on the table. Page 22 identifies all the little locations around the city. And we've kind of shown the number, and this is, you know, this first slide on 22 just identifies them all. And you can see them all listed on the right-hand side. We'll go through those in more detail as we get to each page. But you can see there's a cluster. Right now there's a cluster of 8 right in the downtown kind of Justice Corps downtown area. And then there's another 6 that are occurring around the periphery. The next page, 23, is specifically downtown sites. And so, you know, site 2 is the CenturyLink, you know, just to the east of the courthouse. And, you know, we've got the across from the fire station, city auditorium block, the guest house, north of the police station, the Game and Fish Park, which I don't think Game and Fish Park is Is that correct?
13. That's 13. Yeah.
It is okay.
Kingfisher Park. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. North of the fire department, and then the courthouse.
Kingfisher Park is yellow.
That's here.
We give a few minutes for people to get orientated.
I think as we go through it, they'll become...
Yeah, it probably helps, because as we go into it, we have blow-ups of each one, so it'll help. These are for general orientation. We're probably going to clean these up a little bit just to make them a little crisper. The next site, on page 24, then, identifies, I think it was about the six, one, two, seven sites that are along the periphery. And you can see they're really spread out. I mean, look at, if you look at where, and knowing where the downtown core is, when you look at site 4 near the bus barn, that's way up north. When you look at sites 1, it was ASIF, thank you, ASIF, and the verifications building, again, a little bit to east in the Highway 29 area, sites 7 and 8. But again, to give... The idea of this is to get an understanding of where things are within the general location. So now, the first site...
We have Craig Atkins. He's from the Watertown Development Corporation. So he's helped us with that discussion about sites. So he may chime in from time to time. So.
I think I'm going to turn it over to Craig.
You're doing good.
Thanks. Thanks for the information. So... The first site is Site 1. This is the ASIF site. It's over like we looked at, which is kind of on the... I got to refresh my mind.
East side.
East side of 29, exactly. And so here's what we did. On each one of these sites, you're looking at roughly 32,000 square foot, plus or minus. Is that the square footage roughly?
Yeah.
A 32,000 square foot jail. And the 24,000, actually, I think what we looked at, Sheriff, was the idea of initially a two-story sheriff's office, which some function either down or below, and then the dotted in area. So we looked at, just for understanding, here's the jail, with, like we talked about, that 10 to 15% is mezzanine. And then we looked at the sheriff's office and said, okay, if we had to, if the site was tight, could it be a kind of a two-story, whether it's down or below, for some support space, the locker rooms and other stuff, the 911, some of these things. And we looked at that just to understand how it would impact it. So the red area, that accommodates 24,000 square foot totally. This is probably about 18,000 or so by itself, just to look at that. So we did this on every site because it helps to give an understanding of scale of whether the site can accommodate even what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Not saying this is the location. All we did is drop down a box just to say, here's how much space it takes up on that site. So, this site is a little bit away from the core of downtown. It doesn't show a block for the courts facility, for the courthouse. It just addresses these two buildings. When we looked at it, we said to ourselves, what are some of the factors we typically look at for planning? And this is true with every site. So did it accommodate the size that you needed? I think that was one of your criteria, size. Cost, it was lower on the ranking, but we looked at the cost of these properties just to see. And actually, I shouldn't say the cost. These are assessment values, correct? So we don't even know if some of these properties are all these properties available. Should we even assume that? Or we would
have to check. We have to check.
Okay. Yeah. Location and accessibility. So accessibility to the public, accessibility for work release inmates to move back and forth. Do they need public transportation? Do they have cars? The businesses, the impact upon businesses. Again, if it's sheriff's office or jail, it really doesn't have a big impact of business in the community. It's more if you have the courts there, then you have the attorneys and other stuff that support the facility. So that can have a little bit of business impact. Future expandability is on there. Site, when we cite site prep and demolition, so there's some facilities, some sites that have a number of buildings on them. There's a cost to demolish those buildings. That has a cost impact, that has a site impact, that has to be looked at or should be looked at. Utility sizing and location, I'm not sure we know that information, but to tell you the truth, for this exercise, we're assuming they're all there. Yes, sir?
Do you have anything on development of the city yet? Where they're going to develop residential or business?
We haven't. That would be a good thing to overlay to Tyson.
Yeah, we might. Yeah, we might. I guess it's more like if we know of something right now, and there's, you know, this one's kind of far out. Is this even, like, for example, if you know of an issue about a particular site, it might be good to say so. It's not too controversial. But anyway, but this, I'm trying to remember, is this even in the city limits? So that's something that...
Oh, so...
Yeah.
But, yeah, I guess every county facility we do is within the city limits unless they're... So it'd be
unusual. It'd be pretty unusual.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
South Dakota law requires the county seat to be within the city limits?
I don't think the jail has to be, and you can... If the circuit says it's okay, I think you can even do that with the courts if you want to, but I don't think it's done anywhere. So, in theory,
it's mandated. That's why
we might need to double check. I believe it might mandate that the sheriff's office resides within the county.
Okay. And if that's the case, that would take this one off the table then.
I think it's going to.
Well, you can easily say the possibility of this being annexed into the city limits is there because the city limits is on the road. That blue square above that blue fireworks, that is in the city limits.
Okay.
So,
and they like annex,
it could very easily be added if that, not that I'm saying that's the option, but I mean.
Mm-hmm. So, you look at a site like this and it's massive. It's a lot more. I mean, if you look down below, it's zoned for, I think, the industrial. It's not in a flood zone. The assessed value is about $675,000, and it's a large piece of property. 1,218,000 square feet. I was trying to think of acres, but dividing by 43,000, I didn't really work very well. So one of the things I was going to ask is in our mind, and we'll have to go through this, but we have to talk about utilization of buildings, and that'll be part of it. So one of the things that will affect all these locations will be whether or not courts goes with the jail and sheriff's office. What goes where is going to be a part of the important factor. Utilizing that existing courthouse in the best way we can utilize that is something we have to talk through. That entire courts floor, and actually some down below with state attorney, if they vacate and go to a new building, how does that get backfilled? How does that get utilized? So there's some efficiency and appropriateness. There's also some efficiency with the courts being with the judicial facilities too. Judge, you currently are using or can use video arraignment, right?
Pardon?
You can use video arraignment, correct?
Yes, we can.
Okay. So in an average situation, so first appearances can be through video arraignment, correct?
How often do you
use it,
I guess?
It can be done. That's handled by the magistrate judges. They, sheriff, they use that.
ITV is handled right now is strictly for initial appearances.
Okay.
On Tuesday morning at 10:30.
That's magistrate, right?
Magistrate court, initial appearance. And for bond hearings with the clerk of court's office.
And the reason I bring that up is in a lot of states we deal with, that's video arraignment is not allowed. So therefore, every time you have to process an inmate, process an individual, you have to be brought physically in front of the judge. So if you have a jail here and a courthouse here, every time you've got to move that inmate back and forth. That's part of the problem with the Alexandria Douglas County facility. They have a jail on the one edge of town, they have a courthouse downtown, and so for the life of that facility, they will always be moving inmates two times a day, three times a day to bring in front of the court. So it's an operational impact. By being able to do the video arraignment, that allows you the flexibility of the judge, the magistrate being in their courtroom, and the inmate staying in their facility, so that operational impact of moving back and forth is much less. So I guess that's just where I was going with that. So I think some of these options we're going to look at, can we make the current courthouse, which is not the easiest, be a safe, secure courts facility and provide the additional 26,000 roughly square feet required to make the courts work? And can we make that flow work? The reason I bring up that can we make it work is, in and I think you probably saw this all in the National Center kind of analysis, is you typically have a public zone, you have your court zone, and you have your chambers and kind of jury deliberation space in the back, and then somewhere in the middle you have a courts or inmate movement holding space.
It's secure. Yeah.
Because of that existing historic court, making that kind of zone flow is not easy in old historic buildings. But I think there's some things that can be done. So, going back to this potential site, in our opinion, based on the distance from the downtown location, we saw this as not, if we were to have, I guess if we were to have to rank these sites, you know, one being the best, and five being not so desirable, or not desirable, we kind of feel like this is in a 3 or 4 range, but it's probably not a site that we would consider. This is not about us. This is about us providing our expertise and our opinions to all of you, so I want to make sure everybody agrees as well. So, again, when we looked at this, we said, out of all the sites, we don't think this is so good. Okay. The next site, Site 26.
Site 2.
Oh, I'm sorry, Site 2 on page 26.
No, there's brainstorming taking place. So.
Yeah. There's no Site 26.
Exactly. We've gotten it. We have had that happen before. this is down across from the Century Building, or, well, just east of the courthouse. And I think the reason this site came up, because, again, we superimposed this. We've all heard that based on the connectivity in that that Century Building, that building's not going to go away. It's too expensive. That needs to stay there. There's too much infrastructure connection to that. Then you look at the rest of the block, and there's limitation. I think my understanding is the reason we had this on the as a potential site option was the utilization of that Midland Plaza building in the north kind of west corner of the site. Could government services, could county services move into that building, and could you repurpose the entire courthouse for court services? I think that was my understanding, and Al, I think that was one of the ones you brought up as well. We can keep that on the block. What we're doing, though, is my only concern is some of this study addresses the critical issue has been the justice facilities, the courts, the jail, sheriff's office. By adding this into the equation, now we're adding the remodeling of an existing building for government services that might not have been in the equation earlier. You know what I'm saying? So it potentially is adding cost to it. And the other question is this the appropriate building for county services to go in? Would that make sense? You know, so again, we saw this site as very marginal in the big picture.
Yeah, the other thing with showing the footprint of the jail and the sheriff's office, once we throw in the parking factor, we're out of space. We don't have any room for expansion there, even if you wanted to bookend build that. If you wanted to fold it over where it says jail and trying to add a piece onto there, we have no room because we're out of parking based on what the parking regulations are for the city of Watertown. So here's a prime example of something that's right next to the courthouse, but with what you're looking for, does not provide the appropriate space for that.
Well, my comments were just regarding the courthouse being maybe something you guys, when there's enough space or not, used for court services.
Yeah.
And then all the other governmental services go over there.
Yeah.
And that would maybe free up space. You don't have to build a whole new building, steel structure.
Yeah.
You can put another floor on it if you want, and so on.
When
so it was never intended to be for jail over there.
So what I will do for the next meeting that's, I think, really important is to show, and you had it done before, but we're going to step back and do our rendition as well. We need to look at the courthouse and say, how would this be converted into a safe, secure court facility to address that program? So next time, what we're going to do is show that how it can work or how it can't work on that site. And I think that's going to be an important plan to look at. Because, again, Al, I think my concern is you've got that gorgeous atrium. We can't touch that atrium. I mean, really, you wouldn't want to touch it. I'd probably have to give up my architectural license if I ever touched that. So you've got
rotunda, actually. You have to say rotunda, not atrium.
A rotunda. Sorry, thank you. So, again, it goes back to that secure circulation and separation that the courts requires. Making that work in that building is a little difficult, even if you've got another floor. and actually tell you, because the other thing is, and we'll look at that, because I want to make sure, we want to make sure every stone is turned over, because we want to make sure we hit on everybody's concerns. For courtrooms, you need large, clear, open space. You really shouldn't have columns to block sight lines. To provide the proper litigation spaces and well area that you need, you have to have certain ceiling heights as well. So some of those areas could be hard to convert into some of that space. So, but we'll take a look at that. I think we're going to expand on that the next week.
So I was saying regarding security, you know, you don't have your general public running in there anymore. You can be over in the other building. So you have a lot less human traffic coming through, non-essential, you might say.
You mean for court security?
Right.
Yeah. You're right. I mean, typically most, you know, people get irate a little bit about maybe their taxes or whatever that typically happens. Sure. But they're not, you don't have the same issues you do in a court's facility. The court's facility, a lot of times it's civil cases and things like this one.
If you have the two doors, you can put metal detectors on both of them, or just use one. I don't doubt it.
Yeah, and the metal detector issue too, and we just had another county the other day that I'm doing a study for, another county that has a staffing impact. So so long as you are operating that, you have somebody there, you know, and that has to be factored into, and that'll be part of that operational analysis.
So, I mean, just to finish up on this, I guess this would be viable if it was used in combination with the current courthouse site, and that's the potential for it.
So really the Midland Plaza would be the building that we would be talking about, and otherwise it would be taken off the rolls as far as an option for a jail sheriff's office. Right. Midland Plaza is the only building that would be there.
And you lose your expandability.
I guess one of the questions I have real quick is like Al said, the city ordinance requires one space for every 250 square feet of gross building area. So right now your parking is under what's required by the city. In this option, can this be torn down to convert for general government parking?
I don't know. The parking around it could probably, an elderly lady owns it, that could be bought. And, well, I know it could be bought, but, you know, whether the price is right or not. But whether you need,
gotta ask.
You would need the parking where those existing buildings are up in the right-hand corner. You would need all that for parking, just for the courthouse. You know, no court facilities there.
So we'll have to look at. As we move into site analysis, we're going to look at parking too. Okay. And it's so parking is not an issue with the jail. We have to accommodate staffing and things like that, but that's really not a big issue. And sometimes small contingency for work release.
Yeah.
The sheriff's office, that is a little bit more based on your staffing.
No, but I mean, over there, you wouldn't need that. You wouldn't need to take into account parking for jail staff or work release.
No, but you should take into account parking for community citizens coming to a government center.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So we'll look at that. We'll get into that a little bit more. The next page, page 27, looks at site 3. This was a site down at the 2nd Street, kind of railroad edition. Let's see.
This is south of the fire department.
Yes, exactly. So this is the one I think that has the gas station down on that kind of southeast or southwest corner. So there's a gas station right there. The question with this that we saw is you know, a property, a site like this where you see you don't need the entire site. But the reality is when we talk about future expansion, at some point you would need probably that entire site. We're also assuming that none of these buildings would be repurposed that really were to operate, to make this operationally efficient and functional. And really everything's being demolished to accommodate this on the block. To us, the size of the site seemed appropriate. The location is fairly, it's in the downtown core, it's not that far away. So its ability for future expansion with tearing down others could be accommodated. It will have a little bit more cost associated with it for demolition of the existing building. There could be some soil contamination from the gas station that's there. A lot of times remediation, depending upon the extent of it, it's hard to put an exact number, but that can range $30,000 to $100,000, depending on soil remediation, if there's contaminants in the soil from petroleum.
One question I have is, are we opening up a can of worms or raising an issue with lots that have been identified that business owners may not know that their lot was identified?
I hope not.
I would say yes. I think we need to be very careful on how we perceive it.
Okay, and
well, right here with this particular site, yes.
Okay.
I mean, you have three building, the owners, from my personal knowledge, they're basically not for sale.
Okay.
The reason I say that is, like, the building straight across from the fire hall, I've been there 22 years, and we've continuously begged and asked if we could do any type of training with that building. The gentleman is like, absolutely not.
That's a warehouse thing.
A big warehouse.
Yeah.
And I think that needs to come out now immediately, because the one thing I don't want to see happen is all of a sudden somebody looks in the paper and their building site is up there. Commissioners are going to get an earful. It's not going to be a positive thing, and that's why with 15 sites on here, we need to hear from you that these are viable sites. If somebody said this is a great idea, so I mean, if this one's not
scratching them off,
if this one is,
let's go ahead and do
that. I think we should go through it now.
Yeah, out of respect to the business owners that are there. You've got to take it off the table unless they come back to the committee and say, yes, we are interested, you know, because it's going to create an unbalanced harmony there.
A so, dissonance, yeah.
So number three we could take off the table at this point because of that. And any others that you know there of people that we need to be hypersensitive.
And just so everybody knows, this is the result of some brainstorming we did at the last meeting, and also we had sat down with Craig, sat down with the mayor, and some of these things just kind of came out. And so that's where. So yeah, so you're right. So is one would be hard. Well, do we want to go back to 1 and 2?
Go back to 1 and 2. We need to start at the beginning, because if there's anything that's out there that's going to create an issue, let's bring it to the surface right now.
We've talked about.
And in our mind, there's some very viable sites. So, like, when we looked at Site 1, we said there's other sites that are better than this.
Okay.
This is kind of on the edge, and we thought, you know what, there's other sites are better. Yeah. What we heard earlier that's not currently in city limits, I put a no as this one kind of scratched this.
It would have to be an X. You'd probably want an X.
This would be a good opportunity. Craig's going to probably be the most knowledgeable on what is available and not, so speak up.
Well, this site, I mean, annexation isn't going to be an issue one way or another on a site like that, so... it's probably, location-wise, it's probably, hopefully, maybe not in the next 5 years or 10 years, but probably a little higher value commercially someday, so that might not work in your favor necessarily.
I would think anything along 212 potentially has a commercial value at some point.
It's the location, so... Okay, so that's kind of a pretty, it's low on the, I don't know if it's completely off, but it's low down.
Yep, so again, if we went that 1 to 5 ranking system where 5 is not desirable, it's probably a 4 at this point.
Okay.
Like we said on Site 2, that's something that we're going to look at as an option for utilizing the Midland building.
Okay.
So that'll be that kind of analysis.
Okay. 3 is no.
Site 3, I think we have said no. It's off the table. Site 4, Site 4 is that west of the bus barn, kind of north location out in the field. You know, you can see, based on the property that was identified off 26th Avenue Northeast, that's a large piece of property. And you can see how the jail justice facility is kind of sit on that. To us, this location was way out there.
Okay. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, there may be some future expansion plans for the school district in that area,
yeah, that
too.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah, on the east side.
Mm-hmm. In that area.
Or housing.
Okay.
So I'm going to say no with like a 5 on this based on location. But again, if we need to come back to some of these, if we seem like we're coming up at the end, but.
Pretty big challenge.
Oh, this one's not in the city.
It's not even close.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
Okay.
Mile out, so...
Well,
the
bus barn?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
That's the bus
I guess I made an assumption.
Yeah. And they got a sewer going out there. Right?
I think we should probably take that one off.
Yeah, okay. Let's take that one off the table.
Slave off the bus going to college.
The next site then was Site 5, the auditorium site. So the placement of the jail and how this goes could, you know, the jail, as we showed, kind of going east and west along First Avenue Southwest, that could go north and south. We think, you know, so when you look at the proximity, of course, it's just across the street from the existing courthouse. By placing that jail block there, it does show that it could fit on that site. Again, the proximity of this to the existing, we think, is very good. We think utilization of that auditorium, so when we saw, the question I had is the 329, Craig, is that for the entire site? All buildings on that site?
I guess I'm not sure.
The first district did these diagrams for us. Yeah, Craig just helped me brainstorm. He's familiar with the city. So what's your question again, though?
So when there was an assessed value of 329, which seemed, in general, a little low based
that
on
it is, because these, if it's a city-owned property, the value is not included. So the city owns a lot of this. So it would be all the stuff that's not owned by the city, is, I think.
So basically, if you ran through the alley, the housing, what would be to the left as you're looking at the picture, would be
probably
a separate valuation to that.
Yeah.
The city owns the right, or the east half of that block.
Okay.
So the auditorium and the parking, basically.
So if we were to change it to where it was just this piece here, I think that's a viable piece of property still.
But would you have to use the auditorium in that case?
Well, we're thinking that might be something we want to look at.
Okay.
We need to get, I don't know if plans are available of the facility, some kind of, it doesn't have to be technical plans, really, it's just more of a layout. There's space in there that could be used. I mean, first off, it's got a gymnasium, though. Could that be secured for more rec space? What are the lockers like in there? Could they be used for the sheriff's office? One of the options with this site is, again, if the jail's constructed over here and wherever the jail goes, part of that sheriff's program is jail administration as well. So the jail administration definitely needs to go with this plan. Mm-hmm. But could the sheriff stay over across the street and expand in the existing facility? So I think this option needs to be vetted out a little bit more. We think the location is very good. We need to kind of qualify the cost, and then Lee, if we can get some kind of plans of that building.
Yeah, there's just a couple notes on that. I can see about doing that. A couple notes on that. This one on the good side, whenever, like, we had a town charrette about revitalizing the downtown, and one of the things that came up from the public was one suggestion was to basically do this, you know, just use this parking lot for these facilities. On the other hand, the auditorium, it's a huge, nice, big open space. You have a couple things going on. A lot of people like it because it's a WPA facility. They're still using it for the city's still using it for recreation and some classes and things. On the other hand, the city's also building a multi-purpose center, which will probably, you know, this
mitigate
is,
that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And so I think at that point, you know, the issue then is going to be historical preservation. Would it be okay to preserve the facade, you know, the nice WPA facade? Is that enough, or is it, you know? So just realize. But on the other hand, if we start seeing some cost savings as a result of that, you know, it's part of the trade off.
Here's an example of cost savings. When we talk about in the program for the Sallyport for having vehicles, currently the sheriff has vehicles out at the county garage, has some over here. There's a basement underneath there on the southwest corner that has a 10-foot or 11-foot garage door in there. We could put vehicles down there, secure evidence storage. You could have extra vehicles, riot entry stuff. A lot of things could be in that building, preserving it as a non-secure building. It's not a jail. It could be offices. It could be other things. It could be emergency management. It has potential. We don't know what potential it has until we look at plans. But the reuse of that is staying with what the intent of the building was, a WPA building. Mm-hmm. And that cuts down on the gross square footage of what we're building in the jail then, because we're not having three vehicles and building an high-occupancy, heavy-duty Sallyport at 3,000 square feet that can shrink down because we have the potential. Yeah. I mean, that's an example. Yeah. If that would work, it's an if-then statement.
Yeah.
If this works, then it can reflect the other way.
And I think too, Lee, to talk about it, we've done a number of facilities where we've added on to existing facilities, and we wouldn't impact the exterior, especially the primary along Broadway.
Yeah.
We might have a wall that attaches to the other or some kind of connection link, but that could be done. It's primarily utilizing the existing space on the interior.
Aesthetically, it's that front facade.
Yep. I mean,
but
and you have to you'd have to respect that just as you would if you're, you know, when we get to the courthouse site.
The other, so I'll see what I can do about getting plans and see if, and I'm trying to have a conversation with somebody, some people in the city government about it. So.
My question, could you have the jail on this site? And I don't know if you can, but could you have the sheriff's office where the old jail is now? Do they need to be connected? How would that go? Because that might make the jail fit here.
It's a potential, as long as these gentlemen show the operational impacts of having separation of services.
You typically,
just because of redundancy of services, i.e., right now if the jail has an issue, they can push a button and the sheriff's office, anybody in the sheriff's office can dump that into the jail.
Yeah.
So for safety concerns.
That does help with staffing.
It helps keep staffing down a little bit. There's operational impacts.
But yeah,
I'd say possible, but there's always.
It's kind of like
it could be.
It's that give and take that these gentlemen are talking
about.
It
could be vehicle storage and stuff.
It has potential storage for other things. Yes.
Yeah. Now I know there was some interest, I think, in the auditorium building from somebody else.
So. So this would be a 4, maybe a 5.
No, 4 or 5 is the worst.
Oh, excuse me, 1, 2.
1 or 2.
I know, I saw 10 was bad.
I did too. Mm-hmm. I got to put an architect hat on.
Well, excuse me, my planner here is planning architect time, so we need to draw him back in. So, anyway. Okay. I'll change the number.
I got that to-do list then. Okay.
So, site 6.
Wait, excuse me, 1 second.
I have a question. What you're doing is, when you have the jail, is that already showing room for expansion? Or is that
Actually, that's a very, very good point. These are all based on this 136-bed facility. As we move forward, I think we're going to look at probably the ability to add another 32, another 40-bed unit onto these facilities. And right now, we're not really showing that, but I think we need to.
To clarify, so this jail footprint then
is 136.
That's 136. Is that plus parking, or is that a one? Just as you described it, kind of like, you know, with one story except for the mezzanines.
Exactly. Okay, so it's all jail function.
So would that even fit in the auditorium? I mean, say if you were to pop cells in the auditorium.
No. The jail's not going in the auditorium.
Okay.
It's a separate jail facility.
Okay. All right. Okay.
And jail and parking, like I said, for jail is very, very minimal.
Okay.
But I think to answer your question, once they have sites, the 5 sites chosen, that red box that shows the expansion of the sheriff's, I would believe that the architect could maybe show that same box as far as jail expansion, so you know where you're looking at showing that for down the road.
Well, and these are very crude kind of initial, just to show area. We will show parking and other things as we develop a little bit more, so it's a little clearer.
As we go through this, just one idea that I've seen in other jurisdictions is to build a courtroom onto, like a courthouse annex onto the side of a jail to cut into, transport costs.
Mm-hmm. Actually, that's the other question I was going to ask for the judge. And so
really
we
wait. I don't want to get out of turn if you're going to.
No. That was actually you opened that Pandora's box. No, you you opened that question I think we should address. I have had some judges that are opposed to it. We have done a separate jail facility with the ability for court to be held adjacent to the jail, and therefore you're not moving inmates, but the judge and the judge's staff. Now, operationally, now it's an impact not so much on the correctional staff, but it's correctional on the court staff. And you still have to move court staff with that judge when you're having a proceeding. Electronically nowadays, years ago, it used to be a major issue because of files and movement of files from one place to another. Judge, what's your thought about having a courtroom? So if there was a remote jail facility, having a courtroom there, so you're not moving inmates, you're moving you or whoever's doing the hearing.
Just right off the top of my head, for purpose of brainstorming with this committee, I don't see how that's much different than what we do right now when we go to small towns in the circuit in a 14-county area.
Yeah.
But I don't think that'd be much different because we do that now on occasion.
So one day a week or something, you might have court in that facility at that other remote facility, possibly, depending upon the schedule on the calendar.
Right.
Okay, excellent. Thank you, Judge.
And since mid-June of 2015, all files are electronic, so I don't think that's an issue.
Yeah, so you just pull it up on your bench.
There'd have to be computer screens and technology.
Sure. It has to be a full courtroom, set up for courtroom with chambers associated with it. Yes. Excellent.
Okay. I don't know if we want to have jury trials there.
No, I think you're just doing appearance trials.
All right.
That's all I would think. So if you truly are having a jury trial, you're bringing that inmate over to your jury courtroom. So that's the way we would see that.
All right. Well, from my perspective, I just speaking personally and not all the judges in the circuit, I don't think that's a big deal.
Excellent.
It wouldn't be for me.
Yep.
Other judges might disagree, but it's not a big deal for me.
Would that be a question we'd have to pose to
court administration?
Yeah, to the circuit, basically. Right. Okay.
Our court administrator, Jenny Hamrick, comes to some of these meetings, but...
Yeah.
So that might be a question we pose at one of these future planning meetings,
right,
just to make sure flush it out.
So five's got possibilities. But it pretty much requires working in conjunction with the current courthouse. So.
Yep, exactly. It's definitely not a site, so we're building an entirely new justice facility. It can't accommodate that without taking everything.
Yeah.
So. Site 6, which is off the County Highway Department. Al and I kind of bounce back and forth on this one. I think there is some viability to this. It is a little north of town. This is county-owned property, right? So there's no cost to the county. Right now, we just dropped it there. Probably wasn't the best place to drop it. There's some spoil piles and some other materials there in the back. Could the facility go back here and set up here? I'm assuming this is your fleet garage and maintenance and other stuff that's going to happen, maybe some cold storage. So the question is, you can see based on the footprint of these buildings, it could go somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's some viability to this. It's outside of town a little bit. It's county-owned property. It could fit on the site. You could, if you've got the ability to move, I'm not sure what some of these other little buildings are, if it's just cold storage or what some of these are. If you've got the ability to move some of these, and some of these little buildings we can see picked up and moved on a new foundation, depending upon the extent.
I can speak for some of these. One of that northeast building, far up the northeast building there, I believe is, if it's not scheduled for demolition, it's going to be...
It's going to naturally fall out.
If not the next windstorm.
Are you using it as a practice perk?
It's going to fall down.
He uses it for storage for, signs. But, yeah, the roof is like a screen. It actually funnels water in. It's an old building. It's
so bad, the emergency manager recently had to move the sandbags that he was storing out of it because it was not adequate for storing sandbags. That gives you an idea. The white roof building there, I believe that's about a 2.5-stall garage.
Yeah, that's the weed shed.
For the weed department?
He's got three trucks and two four-wheelers in there, plus storage for his chemical and stuff.
Is it a metal building?
It's a pole barn type building, yes. Mm-hmm. And it's only been, what,
it's not
10 years?
Old,
it's not that old.
Years or less.
maybe 10 years old.
I campaigned for this spot when we did the first round, gentlemen. It's, and I still remember some of the stats, it's, I believe, 17, just a little over 17 acres in the triangle, and I had envisioned using that northwest corner, kind of where that weed shed is, and then closer to the highway to establish what we would need. We, of course, would have to work with DOT to get a turnoff in that northwest corner to get access to the facility. But then I also saw a possibility of being able to have a street that runs and connects with 10th Street northwest. So if somebody wasn't comfortable trying to gain access off the highway, they'd be able to go utilize the city street to the east.
This way?
That blue mark right there.
Okay, so you can come this way. Okay.
At the time, the reason why, just to give everybody in here a historic perspective, the reason why it got shot down was the idea that if we did move into that, it would encompass too large of an area, and we would impact the highway department's operations, and we would potentially have to then rebuild something with the highway department, and the cost figures started to get way too high, so then it was passed on.
But to bring an interesting point, just for FYI's sake, the highway department superintendent was at our last week's meeting, and he basically reported that he felt it was time to start budgeting some replacement windows and doors. And the chair basically said, you know, we just are, what was it, your program, we had the people kind of go out and analyze this building for the first time. And anyway, the discussion was he was looking to $8,000 to $12,000 range of spending money to replace windows and doors, and we kind of went, how old is this building, and do we want to put that kind of money in?
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, was it 57 years old?
Yeah, it was pretty
57,
old.
57,
a little older than the jail.
58 years old.
Yeah.
Very little of it's heated, and so, I mean, just to let you know that main highway building's being looked at right now by us as well.
So the question with that is, and then, you know, so if we're able to accommodate this kind of quadrant like the sheriff was talking about for the facility, and the highway shop is left with a portion of this like this, you know, even if they were to replace these buildings and construct them back, you know, or phase them, they probably have enough. They probably have adequate site on the adequate space on the site to replace this, I'm guessing.
Yeah,
it would be tough. I mean, but yeah, I think ultimately, if you're asking, is there 17 acres there? Is that enough to put this facility and theirs? I think ultimately the answer would be, my opinion, just me, yes.
It would require some working out some kind of a master plan with the highway department.
Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I don't, he might need that those space for those piles. I don't know.
We would possibly run in the risk of pissing off our highway superintendent, or he'd retire and we'd have to find a new one. But.
So this is an option. We think this is an option. In our 1-5 scenario, we'd probably give it a 2 because of the highway impact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the next sheet was site 7.
So it was pretty good.
It was good. One of the best. Good.
But we don't have to transport the prisoners, right?
Correct.
Yeah, unless you do the...
And that's an ongoing operational task.
Exactly. Yeah. So we'll look at, again, that's an issue that we didn't look at.
Well, we talked about the... Could be a
So then, it's an operational cost on the other side. But like the judge said, if you're doing circuit, it's not as, it might not be as big an operational cost. So we need to assess that a little bit more.
So it sounds like jury trials, and that if we're talking, yeah, we have to figure it all out. Can I balance this all out? I guess in making assessments. So.
Exactly. So this was the site of the Ramcota, I believe, site 7, the event center, and you know we're showing the jail and the sheriff's office there. The question that we're really still kind of puzzled with a little bit is, I think, was it thought that potentially this old event center would be converted into the jail?
When we walked in there was a lot of big space, but, you know, so.
We're going to spend between So when you put a new jail facility in there, of course, with the plumbing in there, you're ripping up the concrete floors to get the plumbing in to feed the jail. So you're ripping a lot of the concrete floor out to make it work, and then you have to figure out where you're routing to. For the ventilation, heating, and cooling requirements, it's really not going to comply with what they've had for their event center. I can almost guarantee a lot of mechanical systems are going to be new. So there's, in other words, what I'm saying, there's a lot of...
I can probably save you a little time on this one.
Okay.
There's a general revenue bond on that property, in that building. And unless you're willing to pay that off, you're not going to get that building.
It's still being paid for.
Let's just take that one off.
And you also, it's just kind of a, so basically the thing is, it's hard to make use of the space.
It is. You're going to spend 85 to 90% trying to make it work, and even then, because of the existing structure and existing form, it's going to have some limitations.
Or some expensive demolition.
Yes,
sir. Yeah.
What about just a lot on the east side? What appears to be nothing.
You could, if that was available, and you just wanted to have this area, that potentially could work, depending upon the future plans of what these folks want to do.
I would say, from a community planning standpoint, putting a jail facility next to where we're trying to bring visitors probably isn't necessarily. Right. Going to line up real well.
That's kind of where we struggled, having a jail next to a hotel.
Okay,
go to the bar and check in over here. Just
well, originally, you get a room. That extra land was designed for expansion of that facility or more hotel space.
Yeah, okay.
So,
and it's like you said before, Craig, really everything along 212, you would hope in the long run of the city and the county as a whole, that's going to be your core development strip.
I mean, assuming they have better luck, if they wanted to do something with the event center, they'd have better luck to do that privately and sell the land privately at a market rate and then turn around and build a new event center versus trying to work a deal with the county on a land swap or something like that.
Okay. We'll give that one a 5.
If you'd like. I said no.
Yeah. Or no. I crossed mine off. Politically correct and say it's got a 5.
4 points. 4.75.
So. You know, it's a long walk back. It's all I got. Site 8. Alan and I have gone back a long way, so I'm sorry about that. Site 8 is the site that, you know, I think we almost should give this a better name than failed jail site, but this was the site along that general area as well that was previously where the jail was looked at. To us, again, it's clear that there's, you know, so when you look at the criteria we had next to it, size is not an issue. We've got plenty of space to do what needs to be done on this. It did show a zero cost on this, which I'm assuming
we own it.
Wasn't
county owns it.
Oh, the county owns it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, we swapped part of the parking.
Yeah, we did some land swapping.
Okay.
But, yeah, ultimately it's just a smidgen under 10 acres that the county owns, free and clear right now.
So, you know, if this were a site that was on the table, you know, and you were looking at some kind of other potential development, and we've done this with all kinds of city and county facilities that we've worked on, you know, whether or not the jail is back, jail complex is back to the northern section and not on that primary commercial off the road, that would be an option. I mean, I think the fact that the county owns this property, and you can see by the footprint, you could provide a facility along with expandability and not impact roughly this front half. I think this is a viable site, but we should look at locating an area where it's not so front and center, I think. Thought about the site? I think it's
one thing I would say, you know, with the old plans, the initial idea was your farthest left blue line.
Yes.
To basically put in a road that goes from Highway 212 to 4th Avenue, like a regular city street. We never got it finalized working with DOT, but to put a regular squared-off intersection there. Ultimately, in our talks with them, they said, yes, it was an option to do that. There's, like, two other approaches just to the west of there that aren't being utilized. So they looked at it like, if you could convince that property owner to give up one or two of them, you could gain one here type of thing. But it wasn't ever yes, it was a done deal, here's the okay type of thing.
Okay. An application was submitted.
I'm sorry?
An application was submitted.
Was it?
This is in the city limits, and this it does have utilities there?
It is not in the city limits. It's right on the line. Once again, the city limits goes on Highway 212. But there is city limits all around it, different parts. As far as we know, all your utilities, electric, water, sewer, is all available right there.
Okay. I do know that fiber, I believe, would have had to have been plumbed in, fiber optic.
There was some talk about having something so far west was kind of controversial, but it was the whole Justice Center concept, so it was with the courthouse and the whole shebang. So again, this would be...
It is a little bit of a distance factor, but again, if it's a jail, I think the sheriff's office would be part of it. The question I have is, it sounds like the road would the road be part of this project to make this work?
That's what we had. That was in our plans from the last go around.
So that'll be a cost that'll have to be factored. Yeah. And then the question is, in your all opinion, where that new road comes and hits 212 at that intersection, is that a signaled intersection? Is there going to be a light there? Or no?
When we talked with the DOT, they were not interested in putting a signal. They wanted a regular 90 degree intersection, but they were not interested in a signal at the time. Correct? Their answer is everything has to be studied, traffic flows, numbers. If you build it 5 years later, the traffic, the flows are there, it calls for a signal, guess what, it will get a signal. Okay. But in the beginning...
Yep. So to this scenario, when we start to analyze it, we're going to add a road. We're going to assume that a road has got to be part of a project cost. Whether that can be shared somehow with the future development, but eventually that's going to be part of the county's cost.
And the county's capable of doing that. I mean,
constructing the road?
Yes. Oh, we had our highway superintendent in the previous plans figured out, and it was basically to the length of the property would be like a regular street with curb and gutter, and then from that point on would probably be a gravel road, more like a county or a township road
up to fourth.
He had number. I can't remember what they were. He had numbers.
Okay. Probably going to run into those if you annex that. You're going to have to build that road to city standards, which wouldn't allow gravel.
Oh, yeah. That's
and
good
have
point.
To be curb and gutter from basically end to end.
Yeah, yeah. So the street, city street, yeah. Yeah.
So while the county could build it, there's still cost associated with, if nothing else, the materials to build all this. Mm-hmm. Curb and gutter, asphalt, everything else.
Do we make the assumption then that the whole road is built to city standards?
I probably would.
Yeah.
I mean, we have to throw a number in there. It's nice to say zero, but it's not a zero number. Also, what is the length of time to get the South Dakota DOT to sign off on something like that?
The request was put in a while back. We had not heard from this. I was in contact person that they weren't. I mean, I could find that out.
I think they realized that it was all dependent on the vote from the election, and since it failed,
kind of went off.
It wasn't considered to be a valid request at the time.
Several months to get it approved.
That's what I would think. Okay, so this is an option, I think.
And one other option that I should mention, the rest of the field, for instance, to the west, that land right now is currently for sale, but this piece of property that the city had to the west, the city used to have, and the landowner, the contacts were made at that time that if, say, we built it, it filled the site, and we looked for future expansion, the option of buying more land to the north and the east was definitely available.
Okay. Well, and the other thing, too, which we're not assuming on any of these, which is just I'm going to say it just so we're aware of it, The condition of the soil is a big impact on any project. When we did the West Fargo Police Department, we had this kind of layer of sand in there that really was not good bearing capacity, and we didn't know that until later in the project, and they actually had to over-excavate to get down to where they could do it. And because of the water table, we had a lot of groundwater that needed to be evacuated, and then we had a ground foundation system that needed to be beefed up, which had an impact of about $800,000. So I'm assuming all of these sites have good sandy bearing conditions, not a lot of sinkholes, not a lot of sand, or the loamy kind of soft clay soil conditions.
The interesting thing, the gentleman that owns the property just to the west, there used to be a farm there, and they dug a burn pit about 15 feet deep, and I'm from the west side of town, so this is my area. Like, everything that's out there, you got, you know, 1 to 2, maybe even 3 foot of black dirt, and then the rest is clay, sand.
Oh, so it's a good
soil. So there's a hole that's only, let's just say, about 120 yards from the edge of this property where you can see down on the ground 15 to 20 feet, and there's nothing there but clay. Sandy clay.
So that's a good indication in your experience, or
it's still and it's something we can talk to the building department too about some of these. Matter of fact, that might be a good one to reach out to as a general rule of thumb when they've seen construction occurring in the area. Have there been issues with some foundation problems?
There's a lot of big, I can't think of anything this big out there though.
The only thing that you will see, that little diagonal triangle down on the bottom, that's an old railroad bed that's been taken out.
So right across here?
Yep. In fact, that reason why that hasn't been cut is there's a good portion of the railroad bed with two deep holes next to it. But yeah, it used to be a railroad track, and it used to cross Highway 212 right there.
So we might, but this might, I mean, just to be, it might require boring, might not. I mean, would you, in a case like this, would you always bore, or would you just kind of say, I mean, and that's pretty expensive for them, but whatever.
No, not really, actually. So if, say we narrow it down to 3 or 4 sites, and say the building department comes back when I call them and says, well, we've had some areas that have been not a problem at all. We've had other areas where the people have had to invest a lot more money because of the foundation. It's all about the bearing capacity of that soil to support the building. Typically, to get a geotechnical company out there to do borings is anywhere from $4,000 to $6,000. Okay. So in the big picture, we might narrow it down to 3 or 4 sites and say, you know what, let's have 4 borings done just so we know. Well, typically, in most studies we do, we recommend that at some point in time.
You just need one boring per site.
No, you typically want it. That one could be the isolated one that you were great and you happen to hit where it was really good, and you go out there to build a building and you find it all around it.
The 4 to 6 thousand, that would be for 4 borings, 5.
Somewhere in there.
Ideally, we'd have our building footprint that we could put on there and say, okay, we want one at this corner, one at this corner, where we're going to have our foundation.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. That's good education.
So, this is probably a 2, right? Number 2, it's a yes. I'm putting the numbers on there, and hopefully it's up. Site 9, the guest house site. I think this is the old hotel over there, the guest hotel. Again, you're seeing that kind of footprint that we're showing going over top of it. We're assuming the $746,000, we're assuming that covers everything within that yellow border.
Yeah, I think a couple things on this one. I think the city has designs on this one for a city hall administration building, maybe, you know, in the future. So this would be more kind of like the Midland building, I think, if we were to talk about getting together. I think that's kind of what, because there's a lot of space on this property.
I honestly don't know that. I mean, there's a line goes right here. I don't know. This is Mel Dolly Tire.
Yeah, I'm not sure how he plotted that out.
I don't know that should be included.
Yeah, okay.
You're talking the white long building there?
Yeah.
Right, Red sheriff's box.
Yep, yeah. There's a line basically just on the east side of that cuts it. Yep, right there. That would cut it into 2 different properties.
You might have grabbed 2 properties. I don't think I gave them enough.
I just don't
detail.
Know. It maybe.
Yeah. They used to sell batteries years ago and radiator and stuff, so there might be a possibility.
Yeah, if you put your pointer up there, the far The little building west of the long, okay, to right, yeah, that building there, that actually used to be a gas station, was it not?
I think so.
I think they actually had pumps in front, batteries, full, it was a full service station. In fact, there's already been talk, because the little building that's west of that that's outlined, there's been a lot of concern. There is, they know there's contaminated soil with that.
Still?
Well, not long ago, a huge pile of old batteries 20 years ago.
They know there's contaminated soil right there.
On that way,
question of how deep you have to go.
Okay. So with that being said, knowing what's there.
I think it provides, if you see the footprint, And if we were to cut this site back to here, I think it gives very little expansion capability.
I don't think we need to bother with this one just yet. I mean, unless there's, the thing that I think just if as you look at the courthouse and see what will fit in there, you know, if we see somehow that hey we can squeeze it all in there, we just need to move the county offices out or something like that. Then we start looking around and see what we can do for them, but, you know.
Did we take number 9 off?
For now, yeah. You can always resurrect it, I suppose. It's not resurrectable.
Okay, so site 10. Site 10 is the North Sale barn site, and that's the same kind of thing. You can see there's a...
Yeah, we're talking about property lines again. I just asked for the North Barn site, but maybe that's is the this, flat or something.
Is this wrong? So is this showing too much?
I personally believe, yeah, when you get down in the corner by, yep, down there, you see, you're talking...
This is the old North, this is the old
that
barn.
That part is gone. Yeah, but where you have your jail, you're sitting on the little Stockman's restaurant.
Okay.
And then to the south of that is Arrow Truck Line.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure the line is, it'd be north of the Stockman's restaurant.
There may be something about the way it's flat
here.
It's not?
It may be between Arrow and Stockman's, but Stockman's is connected to that property, is it not?
Arrow and the Swift Line Station used to be part of the Sale Barn property, too. Arrow may own that property and that Swift Line Station now, but in the past they did.
Is that what this is right here?
No, that's just an open-faced cattle pole barn.
Okay.
It's actually south of, you can't even see it. That's Arrow Truck Line that you pointed at
right
there.
One other note on this is I know the city is also, they're looking at a street department, possible street department site here too. So, you know, we're kind of looking at it at the same time just to see
what. I think part of that property, the doctor of the veterinary that's up in the north, Dr. Howard, is purchasing part of that land to square up what he already owned up there in that point. I think he could be right. Yeah. I just talked to Randy Olin this morning about that.
Up in here?
Part of that owns the land, I think. Isn't it? What's that? It's Randy's dad who owns the land. Yeah, that I'm not sure.
Here's what I would suggest. Maybe we just take it off. Yeah, take it off. And then for now, and then again, it's kind of like the guest house of the city, you know, maybe something we can work with the highway department. But, you know, the city doesn't change public. Pardon?
How's it going?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, from a proximity to the city, overall size would appear to be appropriate.
Yeah.
We didn't know about the value again, and we weren't sure about the exact limit, so. Site 11 is on page 35. So this is the verifications building site.
All right, I got to mention, you got the wrong location.
Yeah, we saw that one.
Oh, yeah.
That's
Premier Bank's building and lot. The verifications is the one that's like.
Okay.
So it's actually over.
Yes.
Here.
I didn't even check that. They get the.
This
sorry,
is the
first district
building.
Am
This is still being.
I think we might have a quick answer here.
None of that area will work for you because it's part of a business improvement park. It's got restrictive covenants.
Right.
I mean, I don't envision those as being changed.
That was good brainstorming.
Was that our test lead?
Yeah, that was that guy. Thanks, I'm glad Craig.
Hey, it was brainstorming. We got to say what the dolly said.
Yeah, that was good brainstorming. It was close to. I mean, what's nice about a site like that? It's close to the intersection of both highways. So,
okay, page 36, site 12. This is the one north of the new police station, kind of tucked back in that area. It's Larry's lumber site. We thought that it was a little narrow. We thought it was there is some electrical. I'm not sure if we're shown over that. I remember Lee when we went over there was the electrical.
Yeah, no, the line just goes up to that. Yeah.
This is one of those cases where I'm not sure that the business owner would be overly thrilled that this is being considered, so I think we take it off.
It didn't seem like a good location. Yeah.
Craig, do you have an opinion about this one?
No, not particularly. Okay. Just if you wanted something convenient from the existing police station.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know if it's a good way to totally, but...
Yeah, it's a tricky... Okay, so...
Actually, it's probably the best place for the city because when they bring people to your jail and book them in, it's right behind them. So it worked out great for the city. But.
The issue that I saw as we talked about that is accessibility either on 2nd Street or 3rd Street. Those would have to be opened up.
Yep.
Now we're sending emergency response vehicles into the residence area, even if this was a viable site, to respond to things, whereas... That's going to be problematic. You're looking at streets that you need to take cars off of, so you don't have the child running out between the cars or something like that that could happen. So,
Maple Street on the east side or on the west side is pretty much of a street.
So site 12 is off. Yeah.
Okay. Site 13, which is the game fish and park site. If the property layout is correct, it just doesn't fit.
It's just too tight. Yeah.
Wow.
It's tight.
Filled it right up.
That was a concerned citizen coming up to me. And I didn't know that they were apparently they're planning to move. So, but
have you heard where?
No. It came to me at the charrette thing for the city hall.
We've been working with them on the gun range.
So site 14 then is the 3rd Street and 3rd Avenue site. So kind of heading to the west, kind of an industrial area. But again, it could work. This existing building, what I don't remember, what was this?
That's kind of a warehouse.
Storage.
Yeah, storage.
Potato storage. Yeah. They use it for storing campers. You know, they rent out the storage.
Yeah, it's a body shop.
You will probably run into the contaminated soil issue again. In the middle, right there, up there on the hill, there's old fuel tanks. It was actually part of that Mel Dolly gas station that we were talking about earlier. There's still old barrels up there and stuff. But if you go down to your farthest left corner here, right there. Now you go just across the street.
Yep.
Is it to the west? Right is the old home bakery site where the city did try to tackle the contaminated soil. They were 15 to 18 feet down, and they stopped. It was still going, and they went. Wow.
Was that a diesel? Some diesel storage? Or what?
Well, it's
We actually did that. The development company did that on behalf of the city because it was a brownfield site. The Old Home Bakery in that area, there used to be, where that sits, there used to be a gasification plant for this utilities back in the early 1900s. And so there were a variety of different problems with that corner, but there are some monitoring, but my understanding is most of that plume goes further east and south, not so much north because it's uphill. But there's plenty of information available on the analysis they did to tell you whether or not that's a problem. people on that south part of the property, I agree with that. It's probably something to take into consideration.
The south part.
It kind of naturally flows, a natural aquifer, which flows in the same direction as the river.
Yeah, Luke, when I talked to First District, they were kind of like, because of all the contamination
marginal,
issues.
Very yeah. marginal. Yeah. The soil. There's pretty bad stuff in there.
Okay.
There's a state, in some states we work with, they've actually had funds available for this remediation. Is state of South Dakota, did they have
funds? They did what we could, not on that site, but the site across the street. They did what they could. So they went as far as brownfield funds would allow them to do. And what you run into is contamination that they just don't have the technology to cost effectively mediate. So what you ended up doing is basically capping.
Okay. Well, so a lot of facilities we have where they have, depending upon the level of contamination, they put a vapor system down.
Yeah.
So any vapors that come through the building are trapped and controlled. So you can build over top of it, you just have to do that additional.
Yeah, if you do any kind of excavation or anything like, you can build on this site too.
Yep.
If you have any kind of excavation, though, you would need to take extra precautions to not make it any worse than what it already is.
Okay. So is this site a 3? I mean, do we keep it on and we call it a 3? I mean, is it something? It's got property. We're going to have to demolish that other. There probably could be some soil issues.
What do you think? I mean, I see the rent
on board. That's feasible because that's a building is probably... You know, it's been kind of pieced together, and at one point, I think there was some effort on the city's behalf to get the building to go out of there.
Who's the owner?
I don't know.
The city actually said many, many years ago they had a plan to build the new police department and do a combined police fire, and this was the exact location that they had identified to do that project. And they were pretty deep, and they're probably about 6, 8, 10 months into it when it kind of fizzled between the two departments.
Oh, so it wasn't a property; it was just, do we want to be
no?
Joined
do we want to be friends?
Yeah, it was the whole, do we want to conjoin two departments into one building, and, yeah. And basically the whole project created a feud, and that sizzled. So,
but you guys get along.
Okay, so it sounds like we might want to just keep it. It's definitely not one of the top ones, but
I think it's a valid option. I mean, if all else fails.
Okay. Yeah. And then the last one, of course, we're not going to build. No, I'm just kidding. The last site is the existing courthouse site, which has to be on there. Again, we dropped on the new jail, the new sheriff's office, just so you can see how it sits on the site. There's no way we're going to build a building this size on that site. It's gonna overtake. It's gonna be too massive. It creates too many other problems, we think, to do everything on the site. That's why we kind of feel like across the street at the auditorium is a good option. Could one option though is and we did talk about the operational impact, but remodeling a jail is costly. The reinforcement of the walls, the structure of the existing jail, the cost to go in and repurpose and remodel the jail is just expensive. It can be very costly. And then the other thing we'd have to look at is what's the condition of the existing roof. There's sometimes costs that you have in that building as it is just to bring it up to certain standards. So the question at this site will be, can we utilize some of that existing sheriff's office in some kind of expansion? Could we, what is the impact to remodel some of that jail? And we'd have to go through some old feasibility reports that looked at the condition of it. But I think this is clearly a site that we need to look at to see what are the capabilities to accommodate on this site.
Okay. Yeah. Well, the other thing is looking at this part and parcel, looking at the courthouse itself to see what's possible.
Yeah.
And so.
Okay. Now there is an antenna on the east side of that courthouse, right, Sheriff? I was just trying to remember. Don't you have a communications antenna on the east side of the courthouse?
Correct.
Is that antenna serve your 911 backup or all communication systems?
Can't answer that.
Both,
I don't think it does.
I think it's mostly emergency management.
Okay.
But the emergency management is the backup to the 911 system.
Yeah.
So I think it does both.
That stuff comes in underground now.
Fiber optics?
Yeah, to the northeast corner of the building.
Back to the backup 911 system, yes.
So the question is, and that's an option too, is does emergency management, backup 911, stay, you know, looking at the facility, can we accommodate some space in there? They don't necessarily all need to move with the sheriff's office. As a matter of fact, when we even talk about patrol, you know, they could have their own separate space too. They don't need to be with you guys, right? The highway department.
Highway patrol.
Sad.
You know, I go back to what I I go back to what I've told the commissioners all along when we've worked through these processes. When you have minimal staff like I do, minimal gun toting staff, let's put it that way, and you're trying to maintain a security around the courthouse, around the jail, the more gun toters that I have nearby that I don't have to pay for, it's definitely a benefit to the county. It's a benefit to everybody that works in that facility. So what I've said in the past, and I'll stand by that, is I really can't put a price tag on having that highway patrol office right with the sheriff's office alongside. For, you know, how many times do they come in and provide us backup in the jail facility? Mm-hmm. For instance, when something is breaking loose in the jail, you know, I just... We just can't put a price tag on the capabilities and the operational
it's support help. It's a dollar figure that you really can't come up with, but it's a very high dollar figure for the resource that they're providing.
It's kind of like the operational thing versus construction, really.
So really, when you look at the jail and the sheriff's office and that patrol, operationally, it should be together. Those components should be together.
And in my opinion, the emergency management as
yep.
well.
Yep.
But these will be discussions we'll have to have ongoing. Space, you know, whatever space that we get presented with provides as well. You know, it's almost give and take.
Yep.
The give and take we're going to still.
This is exactly what we need to go through to understand something.
Yeah. Yeah.
So right now we've got a total of...
pretty quiet. Can I... Is it
okay? Yes, Commissioner. Commissioner Johnson.
It's a question more than anything. The existing detention center, as it is right now, could that be repurposed and used for, like, the laundry, the kitchen, and expand the sheriff's office, the highway patrol, emergency management, to utilize the detention center as it is, and put the jail right south of the courthouse, and try to keep the security of the kind of minimum. But I'm thinking about, you know, all of the additional things, you know, like the laundry, like the kitchen. Well, meals are delivered to the cells, right? They're not escorted, right?
No, meals are in the cell.
Yeah, so, you know, something like that.
My only concern, Commissioner, is and I, yes, to answer the question, we need to look at some of this stuff. My only concern is, preliminarily, when we drop these footprints on the site, this shows what the sheriff's office should have as far as operational space. And as you can see, it's actually out in the streets. It's not even fitting on the site. Mm-hmm. So even if that was kind of put into this block, this is really what the jail should have based on 136-bed capacity. You could go vertically. So the jail could go more vertically. This is what we're projecting the county needs as far as cell space. This could go more vertically. But then again, when you think about your historic court in relationship to this massive building behind it, I'm very concerned that if we try to get the sheriff's office and all these other functions on here, it's just not going to fit. It's going to dwarf the existing courthouse, and like I said, you could go more vertically. Going with a jail more vertically instead of the level we talked about creates operational inefficiencies, staffing as far as supervision and sight lines and things like this. Mm-hmm. Now you're, for incidents and control, you need to add staff to accommodate for that additional height within the building. While I understand your concern to look at that, Commissioner, you can see from this diagram, one of the criteria was expandability. Unless we were to able to close off this road here, even then, I think it's marginal.
You know, the one road that I've heard is maybe closed, but no doubt would be controversial, would be Maple, and that doesn't really help us in this scenario. Yeah. But
there's been an attempt of Maple just to the south of that to be closed off, and it was resoundedly said by the city, absolutely not. The problem is Jenkins is one of the largest nursing homes in Watertown.
That's just the start of it. It's like five. That's like five buildings added on, and to get rid of accessibility for the fire department is huge.
Jenkins was the one that wanted to close it off.
Mm-hmm. Yep. They wanted to close it off and build basically across the street to attach their other buildings, and the city said no.
Okay. So. Go ahead and finish.
So so we're going to look at what the capabilities of this site are to accommodate, and we'll look at that further as we go into it. But based on just this layout, from a jail standpoint, we don't think the jail would fit on it, based on the numbers we talked about. And the expandability is just not there. But having it as a secured courts facility and being able to accommodate that, looking at it from a sheriff's, but we've heard tonight the operational efficiency of a sheriff with jail and some of these other functions. So I think there's some value to it, but we need to discuss a little bit more. But I don't think the jail will fit there.
Is there a need to show, here's a question, is there a need to show the difference in staffing impact if we build vertically versus horizontally?
I think that would be helpful because that's a common question.
And especially if the courts are separated from the jail facility, sheriff's office.
Yeah, that's an FAQ. We get that. I think most of us get that question. Yeah.
We were criticized in the last plan for, you know, simply saying that we had a committee that looked at like just what you said. It doesn't fit. It could be a possibility to build up, and then the criticism came back, well, what was the comparison? How much? Well, we didn't spend the time. We didn't pay the architect to come up with the dollar figure to figure that.
But we are now.
On the same site.
So option, what I just asked Bruce on, for option site 15, then we're actually
15A and 15B.
15A and 15B, which would show it in a horizontal. Because I think people need to understand also that you put that jail in there, regardless of the sheriff's office, just showing the jail and the massing that's there. You still have a quasi two-story building, because remember you have the mezzanine. If we're adding a third story, now we have a three-story building, which is going to be almost to the height of what your courthouse is from a massing standpoint, and elevators and things like that. So 15A and B is will show two things. It will show a cost factor, show a staffing factor, and then a reuse of the existing facility.
So, is it, and refresh my memory, this is the only really tight site for the jail that's staying alive, I think, in our current...
I think we need to exercise anything we possibly can here to see what works.
Yeah. Yeah. But you're right, though, Lee.
Yes,
this is the only
tight site.
And and what we'll do for this, because of the historic significance of this courthouse, we'll do a three-dimensional massing so you can see what that block of building looks like, which will... You know, it'll show. I mean, I've done enough of this over the years that I know the mass of that building, and if we were to build it, how overwhelming it would be on that site. Mm-hmm. But you all need to see that massing as well. We want to articulate it and add the prettiness to it, but you'll get a sense for the scale of that building.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Just another thing I would point out, too, I mean, even if you cut that jail footprint in half, you've already taken away two-thirds of the parking by the current standards, I'm pretty sure we don't meet the parking standard anyway.
So
to take away two-thirds of what's already there,
so
you're compounding.
Yep. And it's a very good point, because in this scenario, I think you're still either purchasing this for parking or you're purchasing some other areas to tear down for parking. I think
you're
going
to have to acquire some property just for parking on it, nothing else.
Yep.
Yes, sir.
And I don't think it has any bearing on that, but if you go on the south side of the courthouse and walk from the back door of the courthouse to Maple Street, there's a pretty good drop.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point, too.
It's a big drop. It's almost a story.
Yeah, I bet you're 10-foot drop.
So if you went
there,
into the ground, just a thought.
No. When we develop that, that's actually a very, very good point. Because when we develop that, that will help to lower some of that as well. And accessibility, so for the vehicle sally port to come into the lower level, have some of that, and move up into a jail facility, that can work. You know, it's a little bit of extra movement. but that can work on a slope site.
And are you also able to make sure you do the sheriff's office space as a two-story vertical?
That's what it would be. Yep.
Yeah. To try and see how much better that would fit on that space.
Yeah. Are you assuming demolition then of the sheriff to exist?
Well, we're going to look at it. I think we have plans of the existing jail. We can see where bearing walls are. We know what the cost is associated with trying to gut and remodel jail facilities. So we can look at, we got to do some conceptual diagrams and see is that usable space? Can we make that work? Can we repurpose it? I mean, that's a prudent thing to especially look at.
But we're still not talking about anything with the court facilities on the site.
Yeah, we are. We're talking that we're potentially adding or doing something to the courts to make this a functional judicial facility. And what's the diagram for that? How does that work? And, you know, my concern, too, with that we'll get into more, but I think there's some options to make it work is like we talked about before, you know, diagrammatically, here's your courthouse. Typically, the new court scenario that National Justice showed you is, you know, you have a public area to one side. Thank you. You got courts here, you got chambers back in this side, and you got maybe some inmate movement between your courtrooms. In this building, it's difficult to, and so when the chambers are, it creates a secured circulation for the judges and the staff. In a building like this, basically your judge is coming up and up through public corridors. It's not a good practice in today's world. There's no back circulation for movement outside of public areas. Your movement of inmates, all of these things don't really work well right now. Do we have the ability to add something, you know, in the back, or to add, which I think was looked at one point in time, an addition to the side that respects this historic character but ties on and allows you to use some of that? That's a possibility. And to create a new secured entrance. That's what we're going to be diagramming on this plate. So it's got some complexity. So what's going to happen is we're going to do the best we can with some existing conditions, but it's still not going to be as perfect. And I'll tell you right now, and just from doing this year after year, it's still not going to be as perfect from a flow standpoint, a space utilization, as a brand new quartz facility. This will be more beautiful than most facilities, but so. So that was what we were going to hit tonight. As we move forward, we identified, based in tonight's meeting, in essence, we have site option 2 is still on the table, site 5, site 6, site 8, site 14, and then 15 becomes A and B.
Can you say those again?
So site 2, site 5, site 6, site 8, site 14, and site 15. So going back to the list that we had of the sites, I can find them quickly.
22.
22. So site 2 is east of the courthouse. And like we said, that's primarily moving government services. Mm-hmm. Site 5 is the city auditorium block. Site 8 is the previous justice site. Site 14 is north of the
fire department.
And I thought, did we take 14 off?
No, we left it. We rated it at a 3. Okay. That was the old potato.
Oh, that's right. We talked about the contaminants in that area. Okay. So site 14 is on there, and then, of course, 15, the existing courthouse. Those are the ones that were left on the table. So I think that's a good amount of sites to not hone in too tight to one, but still have enough to kind of analyze and look at cost differences and impacts of the various sites.
Because when in the RFP it says evaluate up to 5 sites. So we're not talking the full meal deal quite yet.
Our fee is going to be we're right, you know. I think we should look. You're right. We're going through this analysis. I'm not going to worry about the 5 site versus 6 sites.
Okay, because I think, well, cause some are kind of partial.
So. Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
for sure. Right. I think site number 2 is just one that's going to sit there, and that's the option of moving as we discuss 15 A and B.
Yeah, the option of moving, yeah.
I think that's
the reality is site 2 is a partial of the other one.
Yeah.
It's just a byproduct to A and B.
Yeah.
15.
And five, so it's 5 really too.
So our next meeting, Lee, was I want to say it was June 21st.
Yeah, let's why don't we go to that part of the agenda right now. Okay. So we had some just down on review future meeting times. I neglected the number. I bulletized on the agenda. Sorry.
Inconsistency.
Yeah.
And, oh, by the way, I do want to thank you all. We had an unexpected sudden conflict, and I appreciate you all supporting us to reschedule tonight. Thank you very much.
So don't do it again. But, okay.
I'm sorry, what was it?
Okay.
But, so 21st wasn't next.
21st, June 21st. And what do people prefer, this room or the other room? Is there any?
I won't be here on the 21st. And Craig won't be here either, but he doesn't know that because it's not on his calendar yet.
Okay.
If you mean Craig.
Is it? Pardon? You prefer this room or the other room? Any preferences?
So from a consultant standpoint, this was, I thought, a much more, in my personal opinion, sitting around a table like this, I felt like we were working together a little bit more. I'm just going to be honest.
Okay. I have one suggestion, though.
Separated.
Move these tables apart.
To more of an L?
Well, even just a V shape, because I'm always having to look around.
Okay, I was the arranger, so. And what advantages we have? We got cooking.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. Well, you get if there's another function here before, we get coffee and cookies. So that's, you know, and styrofoam cups.
One of the things, we're going to come back with some more detailed refinements from what we've looked at and start to narrow into some of these sites and concept plans that we can start to look at and talk about. Another thing we'd like to do as an agenda item for that next one, too, is the following week, on the 28th, we had planned that would be the public meeting, I believe.
Correct. That's on the calendar. So
what we'd like to do is have a draft, kind of a preliminary kind of review of this group. Here's what's going to be presented to the public.
Yeah.
Which does step back and really what in our opinion, and Lee, of course, this is up to everybody, but what we've done in the past is the whys, and you've done a great job, and I think you've got a lot of information on, you know, the condition of the existing jail and a lot of these summary bullet points. You've got to, in my opinion, when doing public meetings, you've got to hit the points that are important, but not dig into so much detail that people are just falling asleep and getting bored with it.
Right.
So why is the county looking at this? Here's the information. How long have they been looking at it? What are the steps that they've been doing? And what are we doing now?
Yeah.
So kind of doing, that's what we're thinking is an overview.
So, yeah, I had a bullet on here to talk about public awareness. So we're kind of jumping around. But one of the things I wanted to try was using some video. And that's something my son and I can do that. That's one way to stay organized, I think, and to if we can make it work. And if you have time, I can show a sample one, maybe toward the end, if people want to see it. And it stars Tom Walder, so it's pretty. You might want to stay around for that. But let's see. So I'll hold that part to the end, though, because I have to hook up my computer and everything. And then the reason I want to show it to people, though, is just if we're going to do it that way, I want to get anybody's ideas for what might be included in a video. So especially yours, since you've done this, you guys have done this so many times. And then one other thing, I just on the discussion, brainstorming ideas from committee members. That once in a while, somebody says an idea, like I said, you know, what about sticking a courtroom on the side of the jail? So I just want to. And you know, Al's talked about the Midland building. So, are there any other ideas out there? And as we have, we might want to just be writing them down, just to make sure that, you know, we know at least we have it out there. So that's kind of an ongoing brainstorming. So I just wanted to open it up and see if there were any other things that people were thinking, just ideas that you're kind of waiting to hear people mention, but you haven't yet.
So if you were to renovate the courthouse or add on, how would that affect the, you know, our court hearings? I mean, would that be disruptive to them, or?
Remodeling courts, doing court work is never an easy thing. Most judges don't like a lot of banging and drilling on that court's proceeding. Most staff doesn't. We've done a lot of course remodeling projects where contractors have limitations. They have certain times they can do certain noise generating work with drilling. It can be done. It has to be considered. If we're remodeling a lot of your existing court floor, if that's something that comes into it where we're cutting through and doing that, we got to talk. Phasing is something that would have to be talked about with that existing building. How do you phase We have done some buildings where, okay, we're going to remodel all this floor. It'd be best if we move out for a period of time. We'll talk about that as we start to develop it. But, Tom, the thing that you did bring to mind is if we do have courts in the downtown current location and we do have a jail at a separate location where you are still moving inmates back and forth, we will have to design, which isn't currently in the program, a inmate transport kind of sally port as part of that courthouse.
Like what they had in Alexandria.
Exactly. Yeah. You will need that, and so we will need to add that inmate transport, which is typically a van-type size area, potentially it's two-bay area, and the ability to have some staging for inmates to bring them up in the courtroom. We will have to have that. Unless we do the remote courtroom, which will be the trade-off. So we'll be looking at both of those.
What, an idea that comes to mind is, what about a skyway? I mean, I know those are expensive, but would that be
from like
say we're to add a courtroom on the west side and then put the jail across Broadway, or a tunnel? You know, that's people say that to us.
I think we can put that cost on the table. I worked in Las Vegas courts facility, and we had a large 42 courtroom facility adjacent to the county jail facility, which has like 3,800 beds in Las Vegas County Jail. But it's a large tunnel that they use for staging that comes across, and it makes a lot of sense. It's expensive, and we'll delineate that. We'll show you.
Some of the county jail systems in bigger states are bigger than our entire prison system.
Yeah.
Small county in northern Minnesota, Kanawha County in Mora, which is just about 70 miles north of the cities, we did an 8-foot culvert from the jail. Basically, they put a 8-foot round culvert, and then we poured a cement floor. We're able to use that to go into the basement of the courthouse and then run a tunnel up.
Actually worked pretty well.
And it did work pretty well.
Had to berm up around a little bit, but and it's a very historic courthouse, and at the end of the day, it worked well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't pretty. You're walking through a culvert, but, yeah, we did board to floor. They hung it in there, but, you know, for moving juveniles, for moving people back and forth, it landed in a basement. It landed. They had to put an elevator into the old courthouse, you know, which talks about the circulation space and everything. But that's one of the ideas that can be there. If there's a courts addition that Bruce was talking about, there's a lot of different ideas. But
okay, any other ideas?
Hold on. Further down the road, maybe it's nothing to do with what we're talking about tonight. At some point in time, that you'll be able to show the cost of keeping the facility together, like the courts and the sheriff's office and the jail, or the ongoing maintenance if you keep them separate.
So, yes, there's an operational cost. There'll be a facility cost for some of these additional space we've talked about, one versus the other, if we separate them. And then there'll be an operational cost for whatever that movement, and we're going to have to talk through that potential staffing impact a little bit more, whether it's the correctional staff moving back and forth inmates and the time that takes, or versus typically in my experience, knowing that at least the judge is amenable to it. We'll have to check with court administration and others, but if they're amenable to a courtroom at the jail facility, that's typically the less operational impact. But we'll have to go through both of those.
So that's a good question. That's in the RFP. I mean, that's one of the things you guys are doing for us.
Yes.
So for each of those options. And that's why we put it on our criteria as well. So, any other?
Just one question. I keep looking at this. Site 15, you know. I mean, it doesn't matter if it's site 15 or site 10. You have the sheriff's office, the square footage there. Now, you have it sitting over the existing sheriff's department jail. I'm assuming if the one is the one layer and the old one is two layers, right?
Yeah, there's a basement in the existing jail and sheriff's office. Actually.
So, in effect, if you did add a jail on there and put the sheriff's office where the existing one is, you would have two layers. I mean, you'd have the bottom floor and the top floor for the jail. So it's not like you're comparing square footage on the footprint there. I'm not making myself clear.
So what I'm understanding is, based on the square footage here,
yep.
because this existing building is two-story, that square footage might fit in that building.
Right, that's yes. what I was wondering.
And I think you're probably right, Al. I mean, there is a good possibility. Functionally, we need to see how that works, mm-hmm. but you're absolutely right. To remodel it, there's still cost to that, but that could potentially work to make that fit. Then the question will be, you know, if this becomes, again, we're going to look at that option 15B or whatever, right. if this becomes a three-story expansion, you know, maybe it's only a footprint that's this big. You know, but how does that happen? And is the future expansion, which we will discuss, is that just continued vertical expansion?
What always makes me chuckle when I mean, we got to flush these spots out, but what always makes me chuckle whenever I look at this spot is in a construction, whether it be deconstruction, demolition of an existing building, and building of a new one, I have to find a spot for 40 staff and at any time 80 inmates to make that site work.
And the way that, so that's a good point too, sure. So what happens is you're having to build this to move the inmates and enough jail administration space to, even if it's temporary,
just like
to move these individuals over here. Then the question is, when you do this, where are you working at? We have done some facilities where we either brought trailers.
We saw that in Douglas County. They, yeah. you know, they did that, but that's just something that needs to be understood.
It's additional cost that needs to be.
Exactly.
It's cost for moving. It's cost for setup. You all the technology you need, and it needs to be seamless because of your 24/7 law enforcement agency. So there's cost with that idea as well. Yep, and that will be looked at.
Now, when you're talking about the jail portion, I think Tyler mentioned there's quite almost a one-story drop from the courthouse down. So what about if you put part of the jail, and I don't necessarily need the pods or anything, on a lower level, but if you had the laundry or the kitchen and offices or whatever, so you, in effect, have a two-story building, but it's only one story in comparison to the courthouse. I mean, you were talking about if you had two stories, it would be a huge building behind the courthouse.
You can put support spaces that you have trustees and what in a lower level. It's less of an issue. You still have to supervise yourself mm-hmm. to make sure that things aren't occurring that you wouldn't want to occur. The expansion will be the question. I think you're absolutely right. I think we can bury some of that. And the jail pods want to stay all together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, your central control and all that for sight lines and controls. The question will be then, okay, those future pods, and we'll lay it out. You know, if we're talking about another 40 beds or whatever makes sense for a long term, how does that stack? And then we'll have the foundation impact. So you over-design the foundation, you over-design the roof structure to accommodate vertical expansion. So we'll look at that potential cost impact as well.
So do you have sloped floors in there? Do you have to have an elevator to get from one level to the other? Or?
No, the slope would be way too much because if you have a 14-foot floor-to-floor, you know, at a 1 to 12, you're going to have this massive amount of ramps. It would be stairs and elevators. And typically in most correctional facilities, stairs work in most movement situations. The elevators more for the convenience, I think, that I've seen.
Well, Al had mentioned laundry and kitchen. Got to get meals, and you can't just hand carry them.
It would be better than what you have now, where you have your kitchen in a lower level, mm-hmm. and you have to somehow bring stuff down and then bring stuff up. That's horrible. If you're able to build it inside the hill, where your kitchen services, literally your supplies and everything, come in at that lower level, and then you have an elevator and take them up to the housing unit, then it's an efficient mm-hmm. operational flow. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any other? This one
will spend more time. This scenario A and B will take more time than the other four together, just because of the complexity with mm-hmm. connections to courts, with time phasing. You know, the first time you got to board 45 guys out, find a place for them. I don't know what you're paying in South Dakota, but they're paying $55 in Minnesota a night plus medical. I mean,
that's why I think you almost have to phase the project.
You got to phase.
Build that first. And to tell you the truth, you know, that's this Pennington County project that we just had bid that came in $800,000 under budget for a 92-bed facility. They're attaching to their existing jail. They're having to go into the, before we can even touch it, they're having to go into the current squad garage and stuff that's part of their police and turn that into a temporary work release area. So that's kind of phase one. So they can move some of these work release individuals. Then we're walling it off and build the entire new justice complex to the south, so that's phase three. And then we're coming in, and once we've moved the inmates from the old jail, we're gutting and remodeling some of the old jail space for kitchen, laundry, property, this kind of stuff. So it's a multi-phase project, and to tell you the truth, I was surprised that it didn't have more of an impact on the overall project goals. But anyway.
Okay.
Just one more thing for the open, if I might.
Yeah.
I can just tell you folks thanks for, on behalf of my staff, given what's going on in our detention center just a little over the last week, I constantly have my staff asking me, where are we at in this process? How are we doing? What can we expect to see in the future? So, when there's a lot of persons in the community here that downplayed our role in this last go around, but it really makes an impact, and it really is essentially a life or death situation, and we just saw that recently. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, we can't stress, we do enough of these secure facilities that it can be a tremendous liability to the county if things aren't in the proper way they need to be for safe and secure operations. And we've seen that over and over in other areas where there have been inmate fatalities that have caused counties to end up paying a large amount to various families. And we see that across the country. So having it designed right, having the proper controls helps to minimize that.
Just to finish up here, so on the public awareness stuff, why don't we adjourn the meeting if people want to stay around and watch a sample video. It's interesting. I think you'll find it interesting. And if you guys have ideas, I'll do that right after we adjourn, and you can stay around if you want to. But if you need to get going, it's less than 4.5 minutes. I just have to hook up my computer. And if you want to be in a video, you can come up and then we'll have auditions too. So yeah, the other. Just on any unfinished or new business, I do have one quick thing. I guess this is kind of unfinished, kind of new, but you have this diagram, and this is, we had some questions before, and I wondered this myself. You can pass a couple. Pass around. That might be. But, the question is, we know Bill Garnos went back to 2008 for historical data, and he got the projections he got. So the question was, if you go all the way back to 1985, and there's a report we have on the website that was written in 2006 by the sheriff's office, they just had one of the pages in there, it simply has a list of all the ADPs going back to 85. What happens if you just do that? So this is just my simple use of Excel, and that red line there is what is a straight, just linear trend line, and you just hit the button in Excel and out it pops. So that's basically the average projection, just a very, very simple. I mean, I don't know if this is something you guys do, and that number corresponds. Now, Bill just looked at back to 2008. Now, remember, in 2007, the 24/7 program was implemented. So that was so Bill didn't have the factors that were present, as a result of not having the 24/7 program. So therefore, he had a lower projection than we would have had, which is kind of interesting. And that dotted black line, remember, if you look at his report, it had all the different models on it, looked like a bunch of fingers sticking out, and he picked a midpoint to get his projection. So if you look at page 64 of his report, that linear trend line, just like I did on Excel with all the years, came out lower, even though he didn't go as far back in time. But that's mostly because of the assistance or the good factor that the 24/7 program apparently is. And then the dark black line is actually what Bill projected. So that's what got us up into that. So that's just a question for you guys to... But it was a question I think that some people had that was out there. But And it's just FYI, people might ask you about it.
And, well, and also, the so on 68, page 68 of Bill's report, that's the one where he was projecting that 114 beds.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is just ADP without the bump up in the, for the
exactly.
beds. So
yeah.
that's
yeah.
okay. So, yeah, so I just wanted to cover that, and that's FYI. I can send you an electronic copy if you guys want it.
So again, to add to this, so that shows potentially somewhere around that, you know, just south of 100, somewhere in that mark. And if you were to add roughly yeah. this 20% factor, which takes into consideration yeah. classification of peak, then that puts us right back at that 120. So I think this helps to validate a little bit that initial
yeah, yeah. It's kind of interesting. It's yeah. kind of interesting. Yeah. But do you have a question, Mr. Mann?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. One of the things this doesn't reflect, though, is what the current jail space was in those prior years.
Yeah. No, it's not. That's
or anything that way. Or
the graph. But you can plug it in there. But that's in the public awareness stuff. That's a good point. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can say, okay, we did this renovation that year, this renovation that year. You can see, but that's kind of what drove the expansion into the space. So. If is there any other unfinished, new, open? Okay, I'll show them a cool video afterwards. So stay around. But and there's a couple cookies left over. I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So
moved. So moved by Mr. Wasland, seconded. If you're in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Okay. Thank you.